జయం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరషద శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణానంద భక్తివేదాంగ గోస్వామి హర శీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం నిత్యలీలా ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరషద శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శీల ప్రభుపాదికి అనందకోడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌరవభక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామగుండ రాధాగుండగిరి గోవర్ధానికి వృందావన ధామ్కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమునామాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర ప్రేమానంది ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ నమః విష్ణు పదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ బోధలే శ్రీమదే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినిధి నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహగ్రహీతాంగం మాం గర్భవార్ణవాత్ శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్షకృష్ణమే హి శ్రీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ భవే భవే యదా భక్తి పాదయోర్సవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వపాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖ శమన తం నమామి హరిం పరం జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాదితరదశ్చాతేష్ విజ్ఞస్వరాన్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదయ ఆదిగవయే ముఖ్యందీయల్ సూరయ తేజో వారిమృతం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నాస్యేన సదా నిరస్తగుహకం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోచిత గైరవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మల్సరాణం సదాం వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తామత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కిం వా పరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యదేత్ర కృతిభి శుశ్రూషుభి తల్క్షణా నిగమకల్పదరుర్గలితం ఫలం శుభముఖామృతద్రవ సంయుతం పిబద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసియా భువి భావుగాః సచిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్తిదిహేతవే తావత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః యం ప్రవ్రజంతమనుభే నమపేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహగాదరమజుహావ పుత్రేది తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదోక్తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానతోస్మి యత్స్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపమతిదీర్షదం తమంధం సంసారీణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుమపయామి పురం మునీనా నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయముదీరయేల్ కమనీయ కిశోరముగ్ధమూర్తే కళవేణుక్వనిదాదృదానందోః మమ వాచి విజృంభదాం మురారే మధురీం నక్కణిగాభి కావిగాభి నమ ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలి శ్రీమదే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినిధి నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతీ దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి శ్రీమతి గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమ వందే నంద వ్రజ స్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశ యాసాం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాది భువనత్రయం గోపీ చరణారవింద పరమాణవే నమ పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజిత శంఖచక్రం కౌమోదకీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయమతి సుందరమందహాసం పాతాళయశమనిశం హృది భావయామి కోమళం కుజయన్వేలం శ్యామళోయం కుమారక వేదవేద్యవరం బ్రహ్మ വാസദാംബുരദോമമോകം കരോതി വാചാലം ഭംഗം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം ജൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ This chapter, 10th chapter in the 11th canto, in some places it is titled as Atma Tattva Prapti. We had this detailed discussion before also, and separately it's there in the website, Atma Tattva Prapti, you will see that chapter. It's a very important chapter in the Ekadasha Skanda. So, Krishna is saying that Suptasya Vishayan Loko, the third verse, ധ്യായതോവാ മനോരഥ നാൽപകത്വാദ്വര തഥാ ഭേദാൽപദീർഗുണേ ഓൾ ദി സെൻസ് ഒബ്ജക്ട്സ് ആൻഡ് സെൻസ് ഗ്രാറ്റിഫിക്കേഷൻ ഈസ് ലൈക്ക് ദ ഡ്രീം സ്റ്റേറ്റ് സ്വപ്നം സ്വപ്നസ്ഥ വിഷയാൻ ലോകോ ധ്യായതോവാ മനോരഥ യു കെൻ സേ ദാറ്റ് ലൈക്ക് ദി experiences in the dream state, or similarly in your vacant state also when you are in the mental chariot, manoratham. Vacant state is not always purely vacant state. Vacant state is half, little bit vacant, but most of the time in the mental chariot. So that's called manoratham. Krishna's point is, vacant state is also in the same way. All of them are temporary. And therefore they are not real. And you will never get permanent happiness from any of these things. And if you allow the mind to enter into that, then it will create a lot of pain later. And at the end, a lot of distress as well. So that is what that verse is saying. Suptasya vishayan loko dhyayatova manoratha nanalpadatval vibhala tadha bhedalpadir gunai. So all sense objects are like that, yeah. And Krishna is saying is that one should think about this and convince oneself about the nature of the world, about the nature of the temporary state of the vacant state, right? And one should observe the rest of others and get convinced himself about it. Said. And similarly, the nature of the sense objects also. All sense objects do not stay permanently. They are there only temporarily. And therefore they are called kshaniya pratibhasam. Momentarily they exist. And permanently you won't get any happiness from this. Chasing the world. You won't get a permanent happiness from that. And different objects we try to acquire in this life, bhogya vastu, for sense gratification, right? And it requires a tremendous effort also. But when Krishna is present inside, who is embodiment of bliss, anandam, and he is present as andaryami inside, but instead of directing our attention towards Andaryami, how unfortunate we are, Krishna says, that you have directed your mind towards the world and to sense gratification. That's his point in that verse. Suptasya vishayan loko dhyayatova manorada nan alpagatva dhubhala tadha bhedalpadir gunai. Important verse, yeah? So, the source of all happiness is inside, Andaryami. And not conscious of any of that, but simply running after temporary sense objects and suffer heavily from that. And Krishna is saying that ordinary people who are not very spiritual, just ordinary life they live in this world, their anandam, happiness, is only in Sushupti, in deep sleep. And they should know that they don't have any sense objects to enjoy in the Sushupti, in the deep sleep, right? And then they wake up and say, I didn't know anything, I had a good sleep. So, in Sushupti, there is only one thing which is the source of all happiness, Anandam, which is Krishna. He is the only one who is present in the Sushupti. So, what is happening is that when we go into Sushupti, we are experiencing Krishna there, and that happiness is what you are reporting when you wake up in the morning, when you come out of Sushupti. That happiness you had in the association with Krishna. So, that happiness what you receive in Sushupti is not available in Jagrat, vacant state, or in the dream state. So, and you can see that if the sleep is not well good, if you didn't get the deep sleep state, you become very depressed. And even if you starve for 3 or 4 days, it doesn't matter. But if you don't get a good sleep for that one few nights, you will go crazy. You'll go crazy, right? What is that craziness, right? And because you lost that opportunity to go back to Krishna in the deep sleep state, and the happiness what you received during the deep sleep, right? And only in the deep sleep for an ordinary person can experience Krishna properly. Only in the deep sleep, right? And we don't have any siddhis in our life. We haven't developed. So therefore, for ordinary people who don't have any siddhis, perfections in spiritual life, for them, the only opportunity they have to experience Krishna is only in the deep sleep, right? So, it is that how excited we are, or how much we want that in the deep sleep, when you don't get it, and that is what that madness, what you feel when you didn't get the sleep, right? And it comes out in the form of a madness. I didn't get a good sleep, and you feel really, really, really affected by that, isn't it? So that is what the point is, that for an ordinary person, the only happiness he gets is in the deep sleep state, Sushupti. That's the only opportunity he gets to experience Krishna. He does not know that. That's another thing. But the importance of Sushupti he is talking about here. Suptasya vishayan logo dhyayinova manorada nayan magatva vipala tatha bhedatmadir gunai. Krishna saying that Veda Buddhi is gone there, and that is what makes you happy. Everybody is equal in Sushupti, isn't it? Once you have slept, body has gone, mind has gone, ahangaram has gone, intelligence has gone, senses have gone, everything gone, and you are happy when you come out. Yeah. So, all that what you are experiencing, on the other hand, all that what you are experiencing in the vacant state as well as in the dream state is all mithya. Krishna says, it is all mithya. So, similarly, the Veda Buddhi is also mithya. Nanatva Buddhir mithya, Nanatma Gatva Sapna Manoratha Vacha. And that is the Krishna's conclusion on that. Yeah. So, the nature is like that. With our avidya inside us, won't allow us to take these things very seriously. We still consider the source of happiness coming from the world, from the body and things like that. And it is very difficult to become free from this avidya of the body. Body has, Vidyarani Swamiji mentions this, in the Panchadashi he will say this, that there are three different types of avidya related to the body itself, acting us all the time. That avidya is difficult to overcome, he's saying. First thing is the identification with the body. That itself is one avidya. Out of the few avidyas he mentioned there, the avidya of the body is very strong. That the body is everything for us now. And living in that state, unable to become free from that, to get out of that. Yeah. So the first thing is this, what they call it as the Dehatva Buddhi. Identification with the body itself is an avidya, it is actually. The avidya in us makes us to think that I am this body and living in that state all the time, not able to become free from that avidya. Then there is another avidya in the body, which is again very difficult to overcome, that this body can be fixed. To think that, you can see that when you get older, people try to dress up or try to make themselves look young. When the hair goes grey, they dye it and make it black and make others feel that they are young still. And even though all other limbs of the body is showing strong signs of the deterioration of the body, and the body is going in its own way, because nobody can do anything about it. These are out of our control. But unable to accept that and trying to rectify the nature of the body, that kind of avidya. This is also another avidya in a person. To think that the body can be somehow or the other saved from its natural changes, what happens to it, like childhood, boyhood, youthhood, old age. It's an established thing. It is the very nature of the body is like that. But unable to accept that and thinking that it can be controlled or it can be brought under control, in this way trying to rectify the body, trying to rectify the nature of the body, which is also a sign of avidya in a person. The sign of avidya in a person to think like that. So, like this, there are so many things related to the body itself which are problematic. Yeah. So, Krishna is saying here in this chapter that Sodharmeshu Madashraya, the first line itself, Mayodide Shavahidam Sodharmeshu Madashraya. Absorbed in the Sodharma and not to make any mistakes there. Or in other words, that one Sodharma, whatever Dharma Krishna has given to us, able to do that, following that, and also he said, Varnashrama Kulacharam Agamalma Samacharet. And Varnashrama Dharma also one should follow. And Krishna said that Bhagavata Dharma he has spoken. Krishna mentions there that the Bhagavata Dharma and Varnashrama Dharma, Bhagavata Dharma should be followed, and if there is any conflicting with the Varnashrama Dharma, then he says you should take priority to Bhagavata Dharma. So Dharmam, now here is the difficulty. Sodharmam is, what is Sodharmam? There is a question there. Mayodide Shavahidam Sodharmeshu Madashraya. Sodharma means that Krishna is saying that Pancharatram Agamam, they are coming from the Agamam. Agama Shastram, Pancharatram is Agama Shastram. Those spoken in the Pancharatriya Vidhi, which is a Vaishnava Dharmam, follow that Vaishnava Dharmam. This is Sridhara Swami's Vyakhyana, commentary on that. To follow the Pancharatriya Vidhi, spoken as the Vaishnava Dharmam, a devotee's Dharmam, to be follow that, right? Naturally, there is a problem here. Problem is this, that it's not refuting Sridharacharya Swamiji, right? It is a difficult thing for many people to come to terms with this. Pancharatram is an agamam and Vaishnava dharmam, right? Vaishnavas follow that. Vaishnavas follows that. Smartas don't. Those who follow Smriti, Advaitam, smart, who are following the Smriti, Vedam, Shruti and Smriti, they don't follow Pancharatram. Generally, Pancharatram is a Vaishnava agamam, and that is what Sridhara Swami says, what Krishna refers to as Swadharmam. You see, even though Sridharacharya Swamiji said that, it doesn't mean that that is the end of it. You have to take it that way. There are many other commentators on Bhagavatam also, well-known commentators here. So, Pancharatra Agamam, what is spoken in that is the Vaishnava Dharmam. Vaishnavas follow that, right? Follow that. What about the Smarthas then? What do the Smarthas do? There are devotees who are really advanced on the Smarthas also, who follow Smriti, Smartha Dharmam. There are very great personalities in that, devotees, right? Pure devotees of Krishna. But they are Smarthas. They are not Vaishnavas. They are Smarthas, right? So, Pancharatra Agamam, what is spoken there as Vaishnava Dharmam, should a Smartha follow? That question will come. Should a Smartha follow, right? For example, Pancharatra Agamam will say the Vaishnava Dharmam, that means bhasmam, ashes are not allowed from the Vaishnava Dharmam. They only put the Gobi Tilak, right? And then they have this conch shell, disc, club and lotus flower marked on the body. They put the, all over the body, they put the Vaishnava symbols, they put it on the body, right? So, and it is mandatory for them, for the Vaishnavas, right? All these things, Acharya Swamiji has discussed in the Brahma Sutra Bhashyam about these things, right? He is saying here, just by doing all these things alone, you are not going to get liberated. Just because you have put the tilak on the body and you have put all these markings, just because of that, you are not going to get liberated, right? And all these are not considered to be moksha sadhana in that sense. Now, this is on one hand, and then Krishna's daily life is spoken in the 10th canto. His daily routine, how he conducted his life, right? So, so when you say that you have to give up everything, and when you say Swadharma means, you could also take it that what Krishna followed. That's also an example to everybody, what Krishna did in his daily life, right? Krishna didn't follow the Pancharatri Agamam, rather he followed the Smartham, Smarthavidhi. So these are issues to be thought through, and there will be always this type of issues in spiritual life. It's not that one for everyone. There's a various thing, different traditions, right? So, and in his daily practice, daily life, Vaishnava Dharmam he didn't follow himself. He didn't follow Vaishnava Dharmam. He followed Vaidika Dharmam. Right? And that means what is spoken in the Shruti, Vedam and Smriti. That's what he followed. Right? And that is how it is mentioned in the Bhagavadam. Right? So when he says Mayodide Shavahidam, how to be taking that, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Swadharmam one should follow, or what he followed Should we not follow that? That question will also come. So when Sridharacharya Swamiji says like this, that he refers to Panchratri Agamam, this is a problem for many people, right? So if you follow Krishna's daily, Krishna's routine, life, then whether you are a Smartha Brahmana or a Vaishnava, everybody can follow that, yeah? Because in Bhagavad Gita also Krishna says this, Yajñārthal karmanonyatra logoyam karma bandhanam. Tadartham karma kaundaya mukta sangha samacharet. In the Bhagavad Gita you will find that verse. Yajñārthal karmanonyatra logoyam karma bandhanam. Tadartham karma kaundaya mukta sangha samacharet. So sometimes it may be a bit difficult to, because after all we are dependent on the commentaries of Bhagavatam. Sridhara Swami's commentary obviously is a well-known commentary. So, but Sridhara Swami has put it like this. And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken that way. And then in personal life of Krishna, if you look at it, it is more centered around Vedam, Shruti and Smriti. Right? So, yajñam, that's what that Bhagavad Gita verse says. Yajñātāl karmanonyatra logoyam karma bandhana tadartham karma gaundaya mukta sangha samacharet. So, through yajñam, you're worshipping Vishnu, yajñovai Vishnu, right? And he is the Sachidananda Brahma Paramatma, one who is present, the Chaitanyam that is present in everything, everywhere. So, karmam that is executed, to please Vishnu is yajñam. Any karmam, what is offered with samarpana buddhi, Bhagavad samarpanam, that karmam, that is yajñam. So, in this way, any karmam what you do with Bhagavad arpanam, samarpana buddhi, and to please Krishna and Paramatma in that way, with such a karma, you won't be bound. No bondage will happen with that. So therefore, all karma has to be executed for to please Krishna. And that way you should become free from the bondage. Andaryami, Krishna inside as Andaryami or Ishvara. We have seen that in the Bhagavad Gita. So, and that karma should be executed nisangada, without sangam, and which means that I am doing the karma without that awareness. Krishna is doing the karma through the body. Krishna must have the results as well. In this way, without any selfish interest, if we execute that karma, whatever Krishna makes us to do, that karma, and that becomes worship of Krishna. In that way, you are worshipping Krishna. It becomes Ishvara Aradhana, right? Krishna is making me to do this karma, I am doing that. That is what is called Mukta Sangam. Krishna mentions there, Mukta Sangha Samachara. Mukta Sangha means that. In this way, Mukta Sangam, with Samarpana Buddhi, if you engage in all karma for pleasing Krishna, then that karma won't bind you, right? Any karma that is done for pleasing Krishna will not bind us, right? And we won't have to suffer from the results of that karma. If you say that that karma will be a waste then, that you won't get any results, no. In other words, the direct results of that karma won't bind you. And you know, because of the results of that karma, either in this world or in life after death, you may get happiness or distress. For example, through karma, either you will get happiness or you will get distress. That is the direct result of karma, right? We do karma expecting happiness. While doing karma, the idea is to get happiness from that. But there is no guarantee that you will get happiness from a karma. sometimes you get distress also. So, whatever purpose for which happiness, you have executed the karma. For example, people have different desires to have children, to have wealth, and or being happy in this world while living here, or to have become happy after leaving this world. For this purpose, in Vedam and in the Dharma Shastram and in the Smriti, different kinds of karma is spoken. Different yajnam, different yagam, homam, all these things are spoken in the Karma Kandam in the Vedam. And suppose if we execute them for the sake of happiness in this world, material happiness, which means that people want children, people want family, people want wealth, things like that, and you are expecting those results, with that sankalpam in your mind, if you do karmam, then you are obviously receiving the results from that. You are bound by that. Because the results you wanted the results in a particular way, and then you have executed that, right? If you do that, then obviously you will get the results, and you will get that material happiness also. But if that didn't happen properly, then you will go through this suffering that you didn't have the children or the wealth, and you will suffer from that if you didn't get the results, right? And suppose the execution of this yajnam or yagam, if that was any, there was any flaw in that while doing that, then you may not get the results, and then you will be unhappy as well. Similarly, to become happy in the world after death, if you have not executed this yajnam properly, there is quite likely sometimes you may even go to hellish conditions, hellish planets, right? So if the yajnam or yagam is done properly, then you can enjoy life even after death, leaving this world. But all the sankalpam, what you have while engaging in yajnam, so that's why that verse is important. Yajnyatha karmanonyatra lohoyam karma bandhana. In that Bhagavad Gita verse, right? Tadartham karma kaundaya mukta sangha samacharet, said. So, while doing this yajnam, in order to become happy in this world and in the life after death, it's not so straightforward. It is complications there. Suppose the yajnam is not done properly, then the results may not come here, nor you will get the results after death. If the yajnam was not executed properly, because there is so many rules attached to all the yajnam, isn't it? So, here, without, what Krishna is saying here is that, without any sankalpam, if you do all these karma, yajnam, without any sankalpam, I'm doing this to please Krishna in that way, and with that samarpana buddhi, that is samarpana buddhi, when you do that, what will happen is, your mind will get purified. That is the benefit from that, if you do it that way. Rather than expecting the results and doing the yajnam, yagam and all that, the chances are that if it is done properly, you will get the results here in this world, and when you leave the body, you go to the higher planets and you will have a happy life there, if everything is done properly here. If it is not done properly, the chances are that you won't get the results, and even after life after death is not guaranteed that you will be in the heavenly planets. You could even go to hellish planets, depending on your activities, what you have done here. But if you don't have any sankalpam, still if you do the karma kandam, what is spoken there in the yajnam, the benefit of that is that
If it is done with the samarpana buddhi, to please Krishna, without expectation of any results, over a period of time, it will purify your heart. The mind will get purified. In other words, chitta shuddhi will come from that. Yeah? So, the goal of yajna is not to get wealth or to have children or anything like that. The only goal while doing with this sankalpa is that Krishna should be pleased. In other words, sharanagati and samarpanam to Krishna. When you do like that, he will get the results, but more than getting the results means children and wealth and all that, he may or may not get it. Depending, that decision is Antaryami's decision. Depending on the person, whether he is eligible for that or not. Krishna will also look into prarabdham. The prarabdham means not to have it. Then even if you do yajna yagam, it won't work. So there are many other factors involved in that. But leaving aside that behind, the benefit from that is chitta shuddhi will come from that. That is what is the point making here. Yeah? So any karmam, if you do with samarpana buddhi and keeping focused on Krishna, then end result will be chitta shuddhi, purification of the heart, and through that bhakti. Because only when heart is purified, proper bhakti will come. Isn't it? Otherwise there won't be any bhakti. So chitta shuddhi and bhakti will follow if it is executed. That is the difference. The same yajnam, it can be used for fulfilling your material desires. Or even after leaving this world, if you go to heavenly planets, you will enjoy there. That can happen. But if you don't have such things, such sangalpam inside, instead, pleasing Krishna and to be with samarpana buddhi, if you execute the yajnam or yagam, the end result will be, if you have no sangalpam, chitta shuddhi will come from that. You will get purified at heart and gradually develop bhakti from that. That is what point Krishna is making here. Yeah. So, every karma, whether it is laugiyam or vaidigam, laugiyam means mundane activities, what you do. Vaidigam means everything what is spoken in the Vedam. All of them, if it is executed with samarpana buddhi, what Bhagavad Gita also says, that can be your sodharmam. That is your sodharmam. That is the sodharmam what Krishna has spoken more than the Vaishnava dharmam what was spoken by the Panjaratriya Vidhi. This is the Smartha's way of seeing Bhagavatam. That's how Smartha's accepted. Smartha refers to it like this, in this way. So, from Krishna's that words, it's very difficult to say what Krishna actually meant by saying this. Sridharajaya Swamiji has given a commentary like that, but majority of the followers of Bhagavatam among the Smarthas, they take it in the other way. Not in the way like Sridharajaya Swamiji has spoken. Among the scholars, all these topics are discussed. Which way to follow? Sridharajaya Swamiji, on this side, he has spoken in this way, but there are instances where there is a disagreement on this. Similarly, he is saying here that the Krishna is present in everyone as the Antaryami. Yomam Sarvesha Bodesha, right? And if you ignore me, Krishna says, without taking notice of me, and if you simply worship me in the deity form, it is something like you are offering the homam in the ashes. Suppose when the firewood burns, there is ashes. So if you offer it in the ashes, it's not sacrifice. It has to be offered in the fire, isn't it? Similar it is, that means you are wasting your energy. So, if you look at the Kabila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti, Kabila Maharshi says this. So, you have to look at Bhagavatam from all sides. Sometimes it may likely that you may think that Kabila Maharshi said like this, and Sri Swami says like this, and Krishna says like this. All these issues will come. So, when Kabila Maharshi spoke, he mentions there that the, if you look at the chapter, 29th chapter, 3rd canto, there he mentioned, Kabila Maharshi is saying this to Devahuti, 25th verse, yeah. Archada vachaye tavad Ishwaramam so karmakrat Yavanna vedi sohradi sarva bodeshu avasthitam. Till you know me, Krishna, Kabila Maharshi is saying about Krishna saying that till you know me within your own heart as your Andaryami, up to that point you should do your karma with samarpana buddhi. And you can worship me in the deity form. You can worship me in the deity form. Right? Then he said, Alpanasya parasyabi yakarotya andarodaram tasya bhinnadrisho mrityur vidade bhayam ulbanam. But if you see Vedam darshitvam, Veda buddhi, between himself and others, I am different from somebody else, and I will create fear for one somebody who sees this, who has Veda buddhi in them, and it will create in his mind fear because of Veda buddhi. Right. Then he said the important verse. Athamam sarvabhudesho bhudalpanam kritalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitreya abhinena chakshusha. Therefore, importance is given to respect Krishna, honor Krishna, who is present as Andaryami in everybody and in all living entities as Andaryami. And you should worship me with proper honor and respect to them, dana manadhyam, and then maitriya abhinyena chakshusha, with friendship, maitri, and samadrishti, with equal vision. Kabila Maharshi says this is a higher worship than the worship at the temple or worship in the anywhere else, right? So that verse, athamam sarvabhudeshu bhudalpanam kradalayam arhaye dana manadhyam maitriya abhinena chakshusha, he said that, yeah. And without doing that, if you do all the yagam, yajnam and everything, it becomes ritualistic. Simply become ritual. Spirit has gone from that. There is no spirit in that. The spirit is to be understood first. What's the purpose of all these things? It becomes a religion then. Everything becomes a ritual and religion. People do that year, day after day after day, without making that change, what should happen inside, yeah? So that he is saying here, it is just like you are doing the homam in the ashes, right? And it is a waste of time, yeah? Krishna is saying, I am the soul of everyone, charajalma. In the Pudanamosham also you will see this, charajalma sa nimili dekshana, says there. He is charam, acharam, moving, non-moving. He is the atma, charaja atma. Without recognizing that and without honoring that Andaryami present in everyone, if I do simply worship him in the deity, in the temple, it is not beneficial, he is saying. So, offering respect to all the living entities is more important than even worshipping the deity at the temple. And because he is present as the soul in all moving and non-moving things and able to worship them, that is perfect, proper Ishwararadhana. Proper Ishwararadhana is that, worshipping all living entities in this world, recognizing Krishna's presence in them. When you have not reached that stage, that is when you do the other things. worshipping in the deity and all that. Yeah. So this worship, is that not the Swadharmam what Krishna is talking about? And this doubt also is there. It's not that it is they are refuting Sridhar Swami. What they are saying is that executing the dharmam, whether it is Vaishnava dharmam, what is spoken in the is that the Swadharmam, or the dharmam what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Kavila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti, which should be taken as Swadharmam, right? So many people have this opinion that the dharma what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, like we are discussing, Ishvara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmin sarvabhudani yantrarudhani maya tamayava sharanam vecha. In that way, recognizing Krishna's presence in everyone as Antaryami and surrendering to that Antaryami and living one's life and doing all the karma to please Him, is that what Krishna is referring to, Sodharmeshu, or is that what is spoken in the in the Vaishnava Agamam, what Sri Rajaraja Swamiji has mentioned, which one is it? And there is still different opinions about it. It still exists, right? So everybody doesn't accept. So you can see different acharyas. You have to remember all this is, it's not like the way we think about it, how this has all evolved. Over a long period of time, many, many great personalities have appeared in this tradition. Sridharajaya Swamiji wrote the commentary, no doubt about it. And it is the most popular commentary on Bhagavatam. But there are many other great devotees, personalities have come through Bhagavatam, who are highly scholar. They may not have written any commentary, but by their very life, they have shown to the world how realized they were and how advanced they were in spiritual life. So they cannot be ignored. They also have to be taken seriously. Many, many great personalities, Madhusudana Saraswati and so many others, right? So they have a little different opinion about these things from Sri Rajaraja Swamiji's commentary. So the question is this, that this Swadharmam, what is that? Swadharmeshu Madashraya. Ajari Swamiji has a different opinion, doesn't agree with what Sridhar Swami has spoken there. Yeah. So Sridhar Swami's commentary saying this Swadharmam refers to Vaishnava Dharmam, spoken in the Vaishnava Agamam. But Krishna's personal life, if you look at it, what he has shown as his Swadharmam is what was spoken in the Vedam. And so that cannot be ignored, because that was an example in the world. Krishna was always the example for everything. So that also cannot be ignored, right? So so this question comes, right? Basically what it means is accepting all living entities in this world as Krishna's manifestations, and Krishna is present inside as Antaryami, and worshipping Antaryami in that way looks like that is the Swadharmam what Krishna is referring to, because then it agrees with Bhagavad Gita also and agrees with other places later on, which Krishna will say in the Bhagavatam as well, right? So Krishna mentions there that this dream state, what you are experiencing in the dream and in your mental chariot or in the manorajyam, when you are in the vacant state, when you are dreaming, you know, when you sit at home and dream so many things, you are woken up, but your mind is somewhere, taken you somewhere, you are thinking about something, right? Krishna is saying all that is mithya, right? Krishna is saying what you are experiencing in vacant state is also mithya. That's the point he has spoken in that word. Suptasya vishayan loko dhyayato va manoratha nanalpagatva vibhala tatha bhedalpadir gunai. So why is it so? Because they are all kshaniya pratibhasam. Momentarily it exists. Right now it existing, but it's not permanent, right? And it lasts for only a short period of time. That is not the truth, Krishna is saying. So what we are experiencing in our vacant state is also not the truth. Mithya means that which was created some time, stays for some time, and then it will disappear. That's what it's called a mithya, right? Kshaniya pratibhasam. Then Krishna is saying in the next verse, Navrtam karma seveda, pravrtam malparatyajel, jityasayam sampravrto, nadriya karma chodanam. Very important verse, yeah? Krishna is saying here, Nityam naimittikam kamyam, three types of karma we have, right? And what is spoken in the Vedam and the Smriti, those karma, then Nitya karma, then Nivrta karma, Nivrtam karma seveda pravrtam malparatyajet. For example, Sandhyavandanam for the Brahmanas generally referring to. Sandhyavandanam is a Nitya karma for them. Daily they have to do that. All the three Sandhyas they are supposed to do that. And some people are still like that. They will make sure that they at that time they will do it. Right? And under any circumstances one should not give up. So, then what is Naimitya? That is Nitya karma. Naimitya karma means you do it once in a way. For example, Shraddham. Things like that. Shraddha karma, Pitra karma. That's done once a month or once a year. There's a certain days decided for that. Right? Then we have Kamya karma. That means karma, what you do to fulfill your desires, to fulfill all our desires. Those Kamya karma, they are fruitive activities in other words. And this Kamya karma is called pravrtam. Pravrtam. So, one who wants freedom from this cycle of birth and death, he says one should give up this Kamya karma, fruitive activities. Karma should never be performed for fulfilling one's desires. Kamya karma should be given up and Nitya Naimittika karma should be performed with the samarpana buddhi, if you do like that, yeah? And that is what he is saying here. Nivrtam karma seveda, pravrtam malpara tejed. Pravrtam should be tejed, given up. Pravrta karma means fruitive activity, should be given up, yeah? And nitya naimitya karma, nivrtam karma seveda, it should be executed with samarpana buddhi. And Kamya karma or fruitive activities one should give up completely. And in that way, if you do that, the mind will get purified and he will be able to experience Krishna, Antaryami's presence inside. More than anything, Krishna is saying the benefit is he will develop tattva jitnyasa. That's the most important part. If you do karmam like in this way, what Krishna has spoken, pravartam karma seveda nivrtam alparatyajel, what will happen is, jityasayam sampravrto, nadriyal karma chodanam, that tattva jityasa will come inside. Once tattva jityasa comes in a person, it is an indication that he is going to get mumukshatvam after that. The necessity to escape from this cycle of birth and death. All this is controlled from inside, Antaryami. We always feel like this, isn't it? I don't feel any need for liberation now. You feel like that. That means you are not ready for spiritual life. That's what it means, right? So, Navrtam karma seveda, pravrtam malparatyajel, Krishna is saying, jityasayam sampravarto, tattva jityasa will come inside, right? So, that tattva jityasa is the benefit of this karma, which one? Nivrta karma. That means nitya naimitiya karmam, if you follow what is spoken in the Vedam, and if you abide by that, the end result is tattva jijnyasa. Tattva jijnyasa will come from that. And that is what we need to get from karma. From karma directly it is not possible to get liberated. Karma is only a stepping ladder, stepping stone towards jnanam or bhakti. So if nitya naimitya karma, if you execute that with samarpana buddhi, what will happen is the rajogunam and tamogunam inside us will get wiped out, and sattugunam will increase in us. And when the mind gets more purified, tattva jijnyasa will come in the end result. The end result is tattva jijnyasa. What is tattva jijnyasa means? That strong desire inside for self-realization. Strong desire for self-realization. Or if you talk in terms of jnana margam, or strong desire to experience Krishna. Inside, to experience Krishna inside, if you talk about Bhakti Margam, right? So, if you have reached that state, then karma's purpose is over. You don't have to worry about karma anymore, if you have reached that state. That means, jityasayam sampravurto nadriyel karma chodhanam. Karma cannot have any of any use to you anymore after that. Purpose of karma is over, right? Then you don't have to even worry about nitya karma, naimitika karma, nitya naimitiyam, what was spoken. Not that you have to completely give it up, but in a very limited form you can do that, that's all, right? You don't have to do the nitya karma in an elaborate way, but in a very minimum way, that is sufficient, right? Because at that stage, the importance is given for self-realization. You are becoming free from the clutches of karma. You are becoming free from the clutches of karma. So more time for knowledge of the self and self-realization, importance is given to that through tattva jijnyasa. In other words, you should absorb most of your time in vicharam. Jnana margam, if it is vicharam, or bhakti margam, if it is bhakti sadhana. Jnana sadhana or bhakti sadhana, right? So at that time, Sandhya Vandanam and Shastra Abhyasam and all in a very limited way, right? And you shouldn't waste a lot of your time in that. So spiritual sadhana, sadhana anushtanam, when you do in spiritual life, only in the first stage, in the beginning only, this nitya karmam, naimitya karmam applies. You have to follow rigidly, right? So, what you have established in your sadhana, you have become very stable in that. Then, that means in jnana sadhana or bhakti sadhana, if you have got grounded very well, then all you have to do is to do the sadhana. You don't have to worry about these things like nitya karmam, naimitya karmam and all, you can give up. That is what Krishna is saying. Navrittam karma seveda. Pravrittam malparatajel. Jijnyasayam sampravrte nadriyal karma chodhanam. You have become free from the clutches of karma. Karma is not anymore a mandatory thing you have to worry about. Nitya karma, namitya karma and all. You can become free. Only for a very limited way you have to do just as a ritual and finish that. Yeah? So, then you don't have to do karma anymore. Karma is not a permanent thing with us, right? Karma, the purpose of karma or the benefit of karma, one thing should know. With karma, you won't get liberated. That is the first thing to understand. Karma, to think that I'll get liberated through karma, that's misunderstanding. It won't happen, right? If it is like that, if liberation is a result of karma, then like karma, liberation also won't be permanent. Liberation also won't be permanent. That is the principle. If liberation is a result of karma, then like karma, karma is not permanent. Karma is jadam. Similarly, liberation also will become a temporary thing. That's the point Krishna is saying here. So, through karma, what do you get in this world? Sense enjoyment, for which you require money, you work for that, wealth, and these things all coming from karma, and they all will get destroyed one day. They are not permanent, are they? So in the same way, happiness in the world after death, in heavenly planets also, is similar to that. If you work hard in this world, acquire wealth, the results of that is temporary happiness in this world. In the same way, the happiness what you get in the heavenly planets also is temporary. Upanishad says this. So, so therefore, if karma bhalam, results of karma leads to liberation, we have to understand that it is not going to be permanent. Karma is never the cause of liberation, and Krishna will say this in the 20th chapter, if you look there, in the 20th chapter, he is explaining that, if you look at the 9th verse, Tavat, where karma yogam should finish, Tavat karma, 9th verse, 1129, Tavat karmani kurvida, na nirvidyeda yavata, malkana shravana dova, shraddha yavana jayate. Krishna is saying there, right? He is saying that, till you get, come to that stage of vairagyam in us, and till you have developed attachment to bhakti sadhana, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, padasevanam, all those things, right? Till then you have to do karma. But once you have developed katha, lila shravanam, shravan bhagavatam, bhagavad gita, if you have developed attachment to that, and proper shraddha, if you have developed a shraddha, in that case, karma, you are not anymore bound by karma at that stage. You are not bound by karma. That is the point to understand. You have to look at what Krishna said in other places also. And then from that you have to come to this conclusion. So Krishna's point is that, right? And there he mentioned in that three yoga processes he spoke. You remember? There he is saying there that in the verses before, Yogastraya Maya Proktam, Sri Bhagavan Vaja, 6th verse in the same chapter. Yogastrayo Maya Prokta Nanam Shrayo Vidhilseya Jnanam Karmam Ja Bhaktischa No Vayo Anyosi Kutrachit. Right? And there he mentioned Jnanam Karmam Bhakti in this way, right? And he says these are the three parts he has spoken there. He said that there is no another one, fourth one, right? So then he said, if you look at the 7th verse, Nirvinnayam Jnana Yogo Nyasinam Iha Karmasu Teshu Anirvinna Chittanam Karma Yogastu Kaminam. Yeah. He also says there this, Tesham Anirvinna Chittanam Karma Yogastu Kaminam. Karmam, and the results of karmam is always going to bring distress. This we have to accept it. We may not accept it now because everybody is working hard to get some results. So in that state it is difficult to accept it. But if you have managed to get to that realization state, everything is based on your realizations inside. Yeah. If you recognize the end result of all karma is distress at the end, from that vairagyam comes, detachment. You are able to renounce karma once for all, lose all taste for karma. And one person who has come to that conclusion, he is eligible, qualified for Jnana Marga. One who has come to understand, because realizing the fault of this karma, that it will bring distress at the end, and he has got disgusted with karma, And that way Vairagyam had come to him, not to indulge in karma anymore. Such a person, Krishna is saying here, is qualified for Jnanamargam. For Jnanamargam. So when you study those verses, you shouldn't take one verse and start, and you have to see what is Krishna trying to drive at. So 3-4 verses you have to look at it together to understand the message properly, right? So one verse developed intense detachment to this world, worldly pleasures or worldly happiness. He is the one who is qualified for Jnanamargam. Who is called for Jnanamargam, right? But then there are people who are completely attached to material happiness in this world. There are all types of people here, isn't it? People who are very attached to material happiness. For them, they should follow Karma Yoga. For them, Karma Yoga. And that is Krishna's point there. If you are so attached to them, then you follow Karma Yoga process. If you want to come out. There are people who want to come out, but they are unable to because of the vasana inside. Very attached to work, very attached to happiness of this world. And at the same time, they want to get liberated also. So Krishna says, they are, for them, because karma is the problem for them, stopping them from doing that. For them, the process is that they follow karma yogam process. That I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, he should give up and offer the results to Krishna. That is karma yogam process. If he follows the karma yogam process, then he will become free from that. Through karma yogam, you will become free. And then you will become qualified for either jnana margam or for bhakti margam. Karma yogam itself is not the yoga process for liberation. But karma yogam can take you up to that point to become free from the attachment to karma and then make you qualified for jnana yogam or bhakti yogam. Krishna says in the next verse, Yadruchaya Malkadasu. If you look at that same chapter, Yadruchaya Malkadasu. Jagash. Malkadado. Jagash Shraddhastriya Puman. No, no, no. Nadi Satto. Bhakti Yoga se Siddhida. So, who becomes qualified for Bhakti Yoga then? That's what that verse is. Yadruchaya malkadado jada shraddhastriya puman na narvino nadi satto bhakti yogastu siddhida. So Krishna's point is that due to some good luck, good fortune, can say some good fortune, right? Somebody who develops a little taste for hearing Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, chanting the holy name, at the same time, Vairagyam has not come. Attachment is still there, inside. And on the other hand, he is not very attached to sense gratification either. Who are right in that middle level, right? And such a person, he is eligible for Bhakti Yoga. So, these are Bhakti Yoga's customers. So, if you look at that, you can see majority in the world is for Bhakti Yoga. There are a lot of people who have, everybody in this world is not working hard to enjoy life. Many people come to realize after some time, all this work is a waste of time, it's not getting me anywhere. I'm not getting much happiness out of it. On the other hand, there is still attachment inside to form, family, children, everything, wealth. You're not able to give that up also. Such people are qualified for Bhakti Yoga. That's the only option for them. It's for them. They are not qualified for Jnanamargam. Because Vairagyam is not there. The level of Vairagyam required is not there in them. So Krishna has spoken who is qualified for Jnanam, who is qualified for Bhakti. Right? And there it is clear that Krishna mentions this, that karma directly don't take you to moksha, to liberation, right? And again he is saying that in the next verse, in that ninth verse he said that, if you look that, in the 9th verse, he mentioned that yataval karmani kurvida na narvidyeda yavada malkatha shravanadova shraddha yavanna jayate. So only when till you get this detachment, vairagyam inside, sufficient vairagyam, and you are qualified for jnanamargam, only up to that point you need to be engaged in karma. Or instead of becoming qualified for bhakti jnanamargam, suppose you developed a taste for shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, all the bhakti sadhana, then up to that point you should do karma. After that, karma is not required. So you can see karma is only a stepping stone to jnanamargam or bhakti margam, either way, right? So, and nitya karmam, naimitika karma, what we have spoken, right? And one who executes that with the samarpana buddhi, that is what is called karma yoga. So, jnana sadhana or bhakti sadhana, both are sadhana. Jnana sadhana means shravana mananam nididhyasanam. Bhakti sadhana is shravana, girtana, smaranam, bala, sevanam, all that, right? If you have developed a taste for one of these two things, either jnana sadhana or for bhakti sadhana, if you have developed that, then you can give up karma completely. The purpose of karma is over then. You have become free from that, right? So, till you get somewhat settled in one of these sadhanas, you have to take care of karma. Up to that point, nitya naimitya karma you should do. And once you have got grounded in the sadhana, then nitya naimitya karma, you can completely give it up, right? And all you have to do is to bhakti sadhana or jnana sadhana. And we practice that, and through them to the end goal, self-realization, one should try. That is the point Krishna is making here. So you have to, when you study this 10th chapter, later what Krishna has spoken about it, you should connect with both and get the message from that properly, right? So, people who have thought through this in detail, in depth, to understand what Krishna's point is, so that's their conclusions about it, yeah? So, look at the next verse. Yamana Bhishnam Seveta Niyaman Malparekochil Madabhityam Gurum Shandam Upasida Madalmadam. First thing he says, a person who comes to spiritual life, he should follow Yamam Niyamam first. Initially, even before he enters into initiation and all that, this Yama Niyamam is a must. And that is the foundation of spiritual life, Yamam Niyamam. One who was not very steady with Yamam Niyamam, if you are not very established in that, he will not be able to do sadhana properly, any sadhana, if he is not steady with Yamam and Niyamam, right? So only in Yama Niyamam, if you are very strongly very fixed in Yama Niyamam, which means that mind and senses are under control, right? Mind and senses are under control. Otherwise, what will happen is, every day there will be a fall down. It won't be spiritual life. It will be a disaster then, right? So, all these problems what we get, this is not normal, right? What's happening now is not normal. This is a modern version of spiritual life. In historic, traditionally, people don't fall down like this way people are falling down now. Because they don't even have Yama Niyamam in life. Then what can you expect? Yama Niyamam they don't follow. And then they fall down. And then they say, oh, it's sad how you fell down. What can you do? Because spiritual life begins with Yama Niyamam. One whose life there is Yama Niyamam, only he is ready for spiritual life. Yeah? So, because Yama Niyamam means he has control of mind, control of senses. Then we can talk about spiritual life, right? And because only then, what they call it is jidendriyatvam, control of senses, right? It does not quickly gets affected by anything, right? Out of these two, yamam is more important. Yamam must be followed. Niyamam is circumstantial. That means circumstances, you can decide whether to follow niyamam or not. That is an option there in niyamam. We have discussed this when we discussed the seventh canto. Varnashrama dharma may be discussed. Yama niyamam was discussed there. But anyway, yamam is important. Yamam, no compromise on that. Because under all circumstances, in all places, wherever you go, in material of that, you have to follow the yamam. Yamam means ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, brahmacharyam, abarigraham. Five things. Ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, abarigraham and brahmacharyam. These five things is yamam. And that one should follow rigidly. These five things, right? You can't have any concession on that. On yamam, there is no concession, right? Out of those five, ahimsa and satyam are the most important ones. Ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, brahmacharyam, abarigraham. The five things. You know what they are, don't you? That. So, out of these five, ahimsa and satyam is the most important ones, right? Ahimsa, way we understand is not being violent, cruelty. That's not basically ahimsa means, right? Apart from that, of course, that is important, not to be violent towards anybody, right? And for example, if you look at that way, this wall, it doesn't have life. Can you say that it is following ahimsa? It's not giving any trouble to anybody. That's not ahimsa in that sense, right? But we have to give up this violent nature in us, or giving trouble to others, that nature, and be able to accept everybody as Krishna's. Krishna is present in them as Antaryami in that way. Only then, if you are start recognizing Antaryami's presence in everyone, then you can say you are established in ahimsa. Otherwise not. So, this is an important thing, right? With recognition that Krishna is present in everyone. And in that way, relate with every jiva to deal with them, right? And that is what they call it as proper ahimsa. Able to recognize Krishna's presence in everyone, right? So, one who has given up everything, and a bhikshu, for example, a sannyasi, who has come doing his sadhana on a daily life, his main focus is on these two things, ahimsa and satyam, right? And able to control, of course, yamam, ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, brahmacharyam, abarigraham, five things, right? And able to withdraw the mind and able to direct it towards the soul, towards the soul. He also has to recognize that my Antaryami, who is present inside as my very self, Antaryami inside, is the same Antaryami present in everyone as their self as well. Their self as well, right? And accepting that principle that everywhere Krishna is present in everybody, in every living entity, Krishna is present, that recognition, and able to show respect to that all living entities, right? One should be ready for that. And that is what he is talking about, ahimsa. So, satyam and ahimsa, the main dharma of a sadhaka in yamam includes that here. So, either with your mind or with your words or with your actions, not to deviate from satyam, truthfulness in that way. Able to accept all living entities with the recognition of Krishna's presence in them and able to offer respects to them. And this should be followed under all circumstances. Under all circumstances. It is a must. No compromise on that. Ahimsa and satyam, right? The other three things, asteyam, brahmacharyam, aparigraham, they are, asteyam means that not to think about others' wealth to steal, that tendency to get the money in your pocket should come to my pocket, not to think that way. That's asteyam. That others' wealth is there, Krishna has given them according to his prarabdham. I got what according to my prarabdham, able to accept it that way. So these things will be compromised when you engage in karma. It's the nature of this world, isn't it? What is all this business? People do big businesses. Some or the other, they want to get your money into their pocket. And for that, they will do all sorts of methods to do that. Yeah. So, asteyam means that not to loot others and not to cheat others and get their wealth into your hands. Brahmacharyam, everybody knows, maintain control over one's genitals and sex desire. And then completely withdrawing from sense gratification that way is brahmacharyam, right? Similarly, aparigraham. Aparigraham means unnecessarily, without any purpose, not to accept things from others. So these five things, yamam. Five things, yamam. So these five things should be followed all the time by a first-class person who is doing sadhana. Neyaman malpare kochil, Krishna is saying here. Yaman abhishnam seveda. Neyaman malpare kochil. Mad abhijnam gurum shantam upasidam adalmadam. So, why is he saying this? Is Neyaman malpare kochit. In other words, one who wants me, Krishna says, he should follow this. Then, Neyamam also he has spoken. Yamanam, you see the word, how Krishna has worded that? Yaman abhishnam seveta Neyaman malpare kochit. Kochit means it is not compulsory as such. All the time. Some circumstances you may have to adjust things. What do they mean? Shaujam, sandosham, tapasya, swadhyayam, ishara pranidhanam. These are the niyamam. So, depending upon the circumstances, these niyamam can be adjusted. These five things. Shaujam, sandosham, tapasya, swadhyayam, ishara pranidhanam. They are niyamam. So, depending on the situations, you can make adjustments in that. Shaujam means cleanliness, inside, outside, and the mind, bodily and mentally, both purity. Sandosham, happiness. Tapasya, austerities and penances. Swadhyayam, studying the shastram. Ishara pranidhanam means surrender to Krishna. All these are variable within us. You may not be able to follow that 100%, but depending on situations, you can manage it whichever way. It can change, isn't it? For example, if you take tapasya, austerities and penances, you may not be able to do the same penances when you go to a different place, different country, different situations. So their adjustment is possible. Similarly, studying Shastram, allowing the time permitting and then the opportunity for that, all these are factors in Swadhyaya. So these five things, Shaujam, Sandosham, Tapasya, Swadhyayam, Ishara Pranidhanam, they are to be adjusted according to the situations, right? Yamam is not like that. Yamam one must follow. Which one? The five earlier ones, what we've spoken. Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteyam, Brahmacharyam, Aparigraham. They must be followed under all circumstances, right? If you fall down in Yamam, anything, if you have made mistakes in Yamam, that means you have made mistake in your sadhana. It has to be taken like that. Your sadhana, you have fallen. So yamam is given so much importance, like the sadhana. Then he says, madabhinyam gurum shantam upasidam adalmagam. That's a very important one, because who should be a guru? That's what Krishna's point. Who should be a guru, isn't it? It's a big topic, isn't it, today? Everybody is discussing, and there is never in the world a time like now with so many gurus available. All over the world, there are so many people now, all want to be gurus. And Krishna is saying, madabhikyam gurum shandam upasidam adalmagam, he says. First thing is that he has understood Krishna properly from the Shastram, right? And then he should have also experienced Krishna inside as his very self, as his very self. And practically he has become as good as Krishna, spiritually, in other words. Spiritually, he has developed so spiritual advancement that he has realized Krishna inside, and he has also from the Shastram understood Krishna, from the Shastram, and he has realized him inside. Such a guru, you should take shelter, it says. And tajnyasaya madabhijyam guru shanta upasita madalmagam. And if you have developed tattva jityasa, in other words, you have strong desire in the disciple's heart to experience Krishna, then you should practice yamam niyamam first, and then after that, practicing it and become stable in that, then you should approach a guru, a first-class guru, spoken like this, madabhikyam gurum shandam. Upasidam madalmagam. So yamam you should follow rigidly without any compromise. Niyamam, depending on the circumstances, you can make adjustments. In this way, Bhagavad Tattvam, after hearing from the Shastram, and one who has realized Krishna inside, not only just studied Shastram, but one should have realized him inside, and he is experiencing Krishna all the time. Practically he has become Bhagavad Surupam. Krishna's another form in that. He has become like that. He should take his shelter. That's a first class guru, right? So the important thing is, guru should have learned the Shastram well, very well, right? And this Atma Tattvam he should have understood well. Atma Tattvam. And only one who has a very 100% faith in the Shastram, one who is doubtful about Shastram, if he becomes guru, you can imagine what will happen. Yeah? So Vedam is very elaborate, and only one who has managed to extract the knowledge of the self, alpajnanam, from the Shastram, only such a person will be able to give the instructions to the disciple and able to clear all his doubts and able to give him the Atma Tattva Jnanam and establish this knowledge in the intelligence of the disciple. Disciple has doubts. Disciple is coming with doubts. So in order to clarify all the doubts of the disciple and able to establish this faith in the disciple, the guru must have already acquired that knowledge from the Shastram sufficiently. And he should be able to clarify all the doubts of the disciple, right? And that is very important. Shastram, its essence and his implicit faith in the Shastram is a must for the guru. So, he need not be a highly learned scholar, but he should have experienced Krishna inside as his very self. only one who has experienced Krishna inside will be able to give Krishna to others. Only if he has got it, he can give it to others. If he hasn't got it, how can he give it to others? Right? So, similarly, if a disciple has doubts about anything, only a guru who has the knowledge of the Shastram will be able to clarify those doubts. So, similarly, self-realization, that realization, he can give it to other person provided he is already realized. Otherwise, he can't give it, isn't it? So, such a guru, one should take shelter. So, that is that fifth verse talking about the guru. Yeah, Madhabhityam gurum shantam upasidam adalmagam, he said. Then talks about a disciple, how a disciple should be. Amanya malsaro daksho nirmamo drida sauhradaha asatvaro artha jityaso anaso yoramo khavak. These are all qualifications for a good disciple. So, first thing he's saying here, that if a disciple is a first-class disciple, now a guru is first-class guru if he is like this. Madhavityam gurum shandam. One who has learned Shastram very well, who knows the essence of the Shastram well, who has got total faith in the Vedam and in the Shastram. He is. And plus, he has experienced Krishna inside. That is guru's qualifications. Disciple's qualification is that amani, first thing, amani, he should be able to accept the guru as Krishna's manifestation. And his main qualification is amani, humility. Yeah? This is in Bhagavad Gita also. Amanitvam adambitvam, he is saying. So this amanitvam is a important qualification, most important one of all. Here also Krishna begins with amani. There also it is amani. Amanitvam means not to have any pride inside, humility to that level, right? Not even the slightest trace of ego inside. Yeah. Similarly, this ahangaram or manam can come from various things. Some people, due to wealth, very wealthy they are, and it will be very difficult for them not to have the manam. Amanitvam is difficult for them. Similarly, due to scholarship, highly learned people. And these things should not be there in a disciple, good disciple. He should be so humble that he doesn't have any trace of ego. And also, he should never think that he is competing with the guru. Malsara buddhi. Sometimes that happens to the disciples, that they are competing with the guru. Amani, amalsaram. Amalsaram means that he wants to, after some time due to familiarity, it can come to that stage, that you feel like you are competing with the guru. So, sometimes, in order to crush the ego of the disciple, guru may sometimes chastise him heavily chastise him. And when he chastises like that, the disciple should not feel any malsara buddhi, feeling competition with the guru or hate towards him. That should not happen to him. So that's what he is saying here. Amani amalsaro. There are examples for that. A lot of examples like that, yeah. See, there was one personality, Mahendranath Gupta, who wrote Ramakrishna Vachanamrita, about Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's, right? And he goes to see Ramakrishna Paramahamsa first time. Paramahamsa was not educated very much. He was just an ordinary Brahmana who did the worship in Kali temple in Belur. And so first time he went to see him, this Mahendranath Gupta, and it was in the twilight, in the evening, and he only had about 10 minutes with him, and then he went home. Next time when he went, it was in the morning, So that's the first time he really got familiar with Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, right? Only then Ramakrishna understood his family background. And this Mahendranath Gupta was a highly qualified person. Qualified in the sense that in them days, in India, in them days, the wealthy people and aristocratic families, their children will come to UK to study to these august institutions like Cambridge and Oxford, and they get their law degree. Mostly it was law profession was more prominent. Engineering and all was not there so much. Engineering, medicine, these things were not. Law was more studied. Most of the people will get a law degree and come back from here, right? So, so he came here, Mahendranath Gupta, and he got his law degree, and he comes from a fairly wealthy family as well, right? So, and everyone in India could not do it at that time. Ordinary people will do whatever they were born with, you know, agriculture, and they were busy with that. They won't think about coming to London or Oxford or anything like that. But these are rich families and aristocratic families who had the wealth to send them by ship to come here and to study. All costs money, right? So, but it was their dream at that time to get a degree in law from here. And so he's having conversation. He has come back after that. After that he's come back to India. And he came and started talking to our Ramakrishna Paramahamsa here. And so when he came to know about Paramahamsa, and he wanted to see what Paramahamsa has got to say. He's not in a very humble mood that he had come. Just wanted to have a chat and to see what he has got to say, what has he got to offer, in that kind of mood, right? So he started conversation. So Paramahamsa asked him, what are you attached to, the form or the formless of God? In the formless, you are attached to sagaram or niragaram, sagunam or nirgunam, right? So he said that I am more attached to the impersonal side, the niragara forms, right? And Paramahamsa told him that like niragaram, sagaram also is possible because the absolute truth can take a form and present in front of the devotee. That is possible, right? And you should not think that only impersonal form is possible. Personal form is also possible. God has a form as well, right? So, and he can appear either in the personal form, or he can also give you the experience of impersonal side. If you want to go into the impersonal side, impersonal realization, then you have to worship him first in the form of a particular form, Ishta Devada form. And when you become mature in that way, worship that form will appear and in your meditations, and even while you are sitting idle, you will be able to experience him, and you will be able to see with your eyes that form what you are worshipping. And when he appears like that, you will be able to see him. At that time he said, will I be able to see him with my naked eyes? Mamsa Chakshusa, this is called. Or through my spiritual eyes, Adhyalma Chakshusa, right? Whether it is the naked eyes or your spiritual eyes, what is called as Adhyalma Chakshusa, right? You will be able to see him. That is the most important thing. You see, this seeing is a very funny thing, isn't it? How we misunderstand. We have got used to thinking that seeing means only through the eye. Yeah? But actually, these eyes are only holes in the body. Seeing process is different. Yeah? Like in the dream, your eyes are not open and you are still seeing. What does that mean? When you are dreaming, you are seeing things, but your eyes are closed. So who is seeing then? So, the important thing to understand is that all senses are not independent. They are in the mind. With the mind you can see things. Mind, when you see the things in the outside world, you use the senses. But mind can also see on its own, without senses. Without these gross senses working, mind can see things. You see? Like for example, these two ears, right? What are these? We call these ears, right? But actually, this is like loudspeakers, you know, two loudspeakers on two, on either side, one on either side. That all it is. Where is actually the sense of hearing is right inside. And that is connected with the heart. Directly connected to the heart. If you look at the yoga process, that is how they will talk about it. They don't consider this very important. These ears. Shravanam happens. When proper shravanam happens, mananam will happen. The impact will be there in a person. If there is no impact, it means that you have not had proper shravanam. There is no proper shravanam. Proper shravanam means there should be an impact inside. We'll come to that later. Bhagavad Gita also spoke about that. Yeah. So, so Paramahamsa told him that form and formless are both there, and you should not refute this form. Then he asked him that, I'm seeing, for example, the forms in the temple, the deities. How they can be Ishvara? How can be God? Right? Sadharam, yes, I accept form is exists for God, but how can that be? So, when I go to the temple, I see the deity there. Is that become God? Right? So, Mahendranath Gupta asked this question. Right? At that time, Paramahamsa heavily scolded him. Heavily, right? So, he said that from the talk, Paramahamsa thought that his intention was, he was more interested in trying to understand things and wants to tell others that he has learned these things. So that's the way the questioning was going on. So he told him that this is not spiritual approach. And you are not thinking about how to develop bhakti or jnanam, but instead you are more interested in understanding things and able to talk about it and lecture others. And if you go into the temple and see the deity, and if you worship him in that, even if there is any lapse in that, faults in that, if you are genuine and sincere in your worship, Krishna will rectify that. Krishna won't take that seriously. Right? Why you worry about that? Because he was trying to say to Paramahamsa that their worship and all is useless. There are so many mistakes they are making. So, deity worship is like that. If there is any faults without your knowledge, not that you are deliberately doing that, but if any mistakes do happen, Krishna will compensate for that and will eventually, if he is worshipping him sincerely, Krishna will take care of the faults in that worship. Right? It is not your responsibility. In this way, Mahendranath Gupta's way of thinking, Paramahamsa didn't like it, so he corrected him and told him that your mentality has to change in your spiritual life, right? So then Mahendranath Gupta, you wanted to understand, Paramahamsa wanted to know about Mahendranath Gupta better and asked him about that, right? About his family life and all that. He said, has he got a family, right? He said, yes, I'm married, and so there was nearby, Paramahamsa's next to him, was standing, Paramahamsa's brother's son, he was standing there. So in his own family, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's family also, there were other family members who were not completely in agreement with Paramahamsa, right? So Ramakrishna turned to this young man who was standing there and says to him, look at him, he's already married. He said like that, right? So so Mahendranath Gupta thought, was it a mistake that I got married? He thought like that, right? So so Paramahamsa didn't say anything more than that, yeah. He didn't say much about her. He didn't say much about her, right? So Paramahamsa told him that when he had this conversation, Mahendranath Gupta told him that even though I'm married, she doesn't have much interest in all these things in spiritual life. In them days, it was like the aristocratic society means they go to clubs in the evening, and they have their own social engagements. They won't mix with ordinary people like that. They don't have much interest in spiritual life. They have enough money, and they aristocratic society. They move in their own lifestyle, right? So she has not much knowledge about it, he said. Who the husband said about the wife that she has no interest and she doesn't have much knowledge about spiritual life either. So for a moment Paramahamsa sat quiet and he says to him, you know, knowledge means what? What is knowledge means? Is it that you've gone to London and got a degree from there? That means you have become very knowledgeable and she doesn't have any knowledge. Is that how you are thinking about it? He asked him. He asked him that way, right? So then when he asked all these questions, Mahendranath Gupta started realizing actually he doesn't have any knowledge. The way Paramahamsa told him, that because you gone and got studied all these degrees, you gone in the law from the big universities in UK, you are thinking you are a very knowledgeable person. But what is your knowledge? You are saying that your wife is not knowledgeable. But what is your knowledge about it? So he put him down straight away and put him in his place, right? And made him realize that. So that day, Mahendranath Gupta goes back. And he started analyzing his meeting with Paramahamsa, what happened, right? He heard everything and he accepted it. He understood that spiritually he is zero. He came to realize that. Yeah, spiritually he is nothing, right? And afterwards he never asked any questions. He will still go and listen to him, to Paramahamsa. Right? So, that is how that ahankaram gone from him because Paramahamsa crushed that. And that is what he is saying here. Amani. Amanitvam. Yeah? Amanitvam. So, there is no worse habit than this ahankaram. Amanitvam. Right? All other are bad qualities, but this is the worst of all, amanitvam. There is so many different bad samskaram in us, which stands against self-realization. Out of all the bad samskaram in us, this amanitvam is the worst one. So in order to destroy this manam inside, often the highly qualified guru may use certain things to destroy his ego, to destroy that ego. And a disciple should tolerate that, realizing that it is for his benefit. Yeah? And the disciple should have the power of tolerance for that. And gurus are different types also. Like disciples are different, gurus are also, all gurus are not the same. They're all different, right? And some gurus will chastise the disciple heavily. And some others will not chastise them like that, but give them in a loving manner, guide them and help them, right? There are many examples for all these things. You heard about Paramahamsa Yogananda, a great personality he was, right? His guru was Yukteswara Giri, you know, the autobiography of a yogi, he wrote that book. And Yukteswara Giri was very heavy. He will give very heavy punishment, very highly, he will discipline his disciples very heavily. Many people who have come to him to become disciple could not bear his chastisement and his punishment and then left. They didn't stay. They couldn't take it, right? And Yogananda mentions that in that autobiography of a yogi, right? And that is Yukteswara Giri. And Yukteswara Giri had another guru, his guru, who was Lahiri Mahashaya. This Lahiri Mahashaya was very nice to all the disciples. He will not get heavy with anybody. Will speak to them in a loving way. And he will correct them in that way. So they were all different. I'm saying that Lahiri Mahashaya was one type. Yukteswara was another type of person. So he always dealt, Lahiri Mahashaya dealt with his disciples in a loving manner and with merciful way. So when they spoke about that to Yukteswara Giri said, his style was like that, my style is like this. And so these differences you will find among the gurus also. Right? So those who are coming to become my disciples, they should tolerate me, he said, for my nature. So both of them, the principle is this, that the ego has to be crushed. If the ego is there, then it is very difficult. If the ego is there, any instructions given won't go inside. Ahankaram will resist, right? And similarly, it will be difficult for the guru to transmit knowledge of the self to a disciple like that. So this ahankaram, which is called here manam, is the main obstacle in self-realization. So while accepting the guru, these things are important. And so similarly, anyone cannot become a guru. That is also not possible, right? Guru has to have this quality. He should have understood Shastram very well. Then he should have realized the self also. Antaryami is presence inside. And that is what he is saying here, that in the last verse he said, Madabhijyam gurum shantam upasidam adalmagam. Right? Upasidam adalmagam means that Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavadi, that he should have realized the Brahmam. And those who are knowing Brahmam, he becomes Brahmam. And similarly, a guru, one who has become Brahmam, he is the one who is actually qualified to be a guru. And only such a guru can crush the ego of a disciple. And so therefore the system was, they say that a guru, one should observe day and night about his life. Is a guru following everything properly? How stable guru is in spiritual life? Because you are meeting someone whom you don't know anything about him, is it not? And then you are accepting him as a guru. That shouldn't happen. You should observe him, and only then you should make a decision whether he should be a guru or not. Right? Otherwise it is dangerous. So, in Paramahamsa's life also, this kind of situations happened. He had a disciple, and Paramahamsa's wife was Sharada Devi. Sharada Devi also lived in the ashram, And she lived in a cottage separately from the main building where Paramahamsa and his disciples lived. So, one night when this disciple woke up in the night, he couldn't see Paramahamsa anywhere. So, normally, if he asked, those days, not like now, you don't have toilets in the house. You'll have to go outside for the toilet, right? So generally, when you, in the night, there is no street lights or anything. It's all dark, isn't it? So when you go out, somebody else will go with you to with the light so that you can go to the toilet and then bring you back after the toilet. Yeah. So, so he woke up in the night and he couldn't see Ramakrishna Paramahamsa there, right? So he normally when he goes out, he will go with him. But when one day this happened, when he woke up, he wasn't there. So suddenly a doubt came into his mind. Has he gone to see his wife at night? This thought came to his mind, right? So he went then to see if he is there at the Sharada Devi in the other cottage where she was living. And when he looked at Sharada Devi's house from outside, because it's dark everywhere, the windows are open, right? And Sharada Devi is sitting inside the room in meditation. She was also highly realized personality, Sharada Devi, right? So, Paramahamsa was not there. Sharada Devi was sitting there and she was in meditation, right? And then he came back, not knowing what to say. So he came back. Meanwhile, he heard the sound of the shoes of Paramahamsa walking back. Right? So Paramahamsa saw him. He didn't wake him up thinking that he didn't want to disturb his sleep. That's why he went on his own. But when he saw this disciple, Yogananda was his name, Paramahamsa congratulated him. He told him, "It's good that you have that doubts about me. Whether I still have a relationship with Sharada Devi like that. I didn't. It's good that that doubt came to your mind. I do appreciate that," he said. "That you should check everything day and night, what I am doing, before you ask me becoming a disciple. That comes later," he said to him. Right. So, you should only accept a guru after you are completely convinced about him that he will not deviate from spiritual life in any way, right? So, but after this incident, this devotee Yogananda, he felt very bad about it, that he suspected about his guru in this way. Such a thought has come into his mind, right? And but if you don't take this into consideration, what will happen is that if the guru has not the purity inside, the level of purity, what is expected from him, and if he has not realized the self, then the relationship between the guru and the disciple will be like the frog and this water snake. You see, the water snakes, they are not poisonous, right? They live on these frogs, little frogs, baby frogs and all. They will eat them. And when they eat them, it will go and get stuck because water snakes are also small ones. They don't have much of a big mouth. It will go inside and get stuck there. And the frog wants to come out, it cannot come out. And the snake also wants to get rid of it. It cannot get out. It is already gone in that far, right? So if it will happen like this, after you got a guru like that, and that guru has got a disciple, disciple does not have faith in the guru. Guru also feels the disciple is not perfect. And in this way, between guru and disciple, but at the same time, through initiation they are connected. So, then what will happen is, eventually the frog will struggle and struggle and struggle, and one day it will die. It will die. It's not able to eat that. So it's a very uneasy relationship between the snake and the frog. Yeah. So, this snake, if it swallows a frog like that, it is not possible to take it inside straight away because of the size of that, right? And the frog won't be able to come out either. Frog is stuck there. Frog cannot come out, right? And the frog is finding painful life. The snake is also struggling. And the relationship between the guru and the disciple will be like this. Guru will be also thinking the hell to get out of him. The disciple also finding it difficult. It's a problem inside. Yeah. So it is like that, an immature guru and immature disciples come together. So that is why these things are what Krishna is saying, these things for us to take notice of all these things before we become a good disciple or a good guru. Both are in there. Don't become a guru and don't become a disciple. Carry on with what you have. And these are not the important things. Prabhupada also said that, but often people didn't understand it. He said initiation is just a formality, he said. Often he said that, but they did, but now that's given the highest importance, this initiation thing. Initiation is not the important, it's just a formality, he said. That, but if you start banging on this all the time, that initiation, then it becomes a painful thing at the end. Yeah. So that's what he's saying here also, that the disciple should be qualified, guru also should be qualified, and guru should have good knowledge of the Shastram and should have some realizations also. How will you understand through his life? You have to learn from the guru, his lifestyle, right? And his mind and his words and his actions, everything should match. What he speaks, what he does, what he speaks, what he does, and his mind, what he thinks, what he speaks, and what he does. All the three things should match. Otherwise, no. So, only if you have convinced on that, then you become a disciple. Otherwise, don't become anybody's disciple, he's saying. And a guru like that, who speaks, who thinks, and who does, all in harmony, all of them, right? Then, if such a guru, he will be able to correct a disciple when he goes wrong, right? And able to give him the self-realization at the end, and he will be satisfied. So, basically, in the fifth verse, Krishna spoke about the guru, and in the sixth verse, he is saying a number of qualities required to be a disciple first. Amani amalsaro daksho nurmama drida sauhardaha asatvayam arthajityaso anasuyo amokhavak. These are all his qualifications, disciples' qualifications, right? So, if he has got all these qualifications, he is a first-class disciple, he says. So, just like there is first-class guru, that is first class disciple also. Just like the disciple tests the guru, guru also should test the disciple, whether he has got all these qualities or not. Yeah. So, and if the guru is convinced that the disciple is qualified to become a disciple, only then he should speak to him about spiritual life and self-realization and bless him. And like guru has to go through all these tests of the disciple, disciple also has to go through the tests of the guru, right? And so that is what he is saying here, all the other qualities, right? When guru is testing the disciple, he should not feel any kind of negativity towards the guru. Amalsaram. Amani amalsaram. And no hate towards the guru. It should never happen in his mind. Yeah. So, we'll have a short break. We'll continue after that.
Sarvatmasumanamvaram vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam Nam namagari bahudanija sarvashakti Tantrarpida nimida svaranina kala Edadrishi tavakrapa bhagavan maapi Durdeva meedashamiha janinanuragaham Tranarami shunichena taroravi sahishvana Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari Nathanam nathanam nasundarim kavidam vajagadishakamai Mahajanmani janmani shuri bhavadal bhaktirahai dogitvai Rai nandatanyoja kinkaram patidamam shami bhavam budav Kribaya davapada pangaja sita doli sadrasham vichindraya Nayanam galada shodharaya vadanam gadgadrabdhaya gira Pulagair nishidam galavabhutavan mamagrahane bhavishyari Yugaidam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayidam Shunyayidam jagal sarvam govinda virahe nami Ashrishyava padaradam pinashtumam Marmahadam karotuva Yathadadava adhulam gado Malpranamada sunayevanapara Sarvatra govindanana sankirtanam Govinda govindam Amanyamalsaro daksho marmamo drida sauhrada asatvaro artajityasu anasuyo ramokhavak. Daksha means expert, means that able to serve the guru properly and who is expert in doing it in a way that pleases the guru. And more than that, when we say able to do service, that's good, that's a good quality. But more than that is, what guru talks about spiritual life, tattvajnanam, able to accept it in the proper way, and that requires sattvika buddhi. You should be in high sattvagunam to understand what guru he is saying. Suppose you have a guru who is like that, what is madhavijnam gurum shandam, who is learned in the shastram and who has good experience of antaryami inside, realization. Such a guru, when he speaks, able to imbibe that without faults, and such a capacity to do that, which means you require sattugunam inside. The thing is that if a person, if he is in the three modes, his acceptance will be on that level. Only in sattvagunam you will know, get to understand the things properly. If he is in rajogunam and tamogunam, he won't get it right. He will misunderstand a lot of things. He will misunderstand, yeah? And you can see that clearly. How people who are in Rajogunam and Tamogunam, even though they had the association of a great soul, they couldn't get the message right.
and they ended up in a wrong understanding and did wrong things afterwards. Wrong things happen here. Yeah? So this Sattvika Buddhi is important. Spiritual life is like that. To get the things right, in your understanding is right, that you have imbibed the message properly from the Guru. That requires Sattvika Buddhi. And one who has not Sattvika Buddhi is called a Daksha. Here. That Daksha word, right? So, basically has no attachment in the body, first thing. And similarly, attachment to bodily extensions, clothes, money, things like that. No mamata. And full realization, everything is Krishna's property. And everything is that bodham, that awareness always, that everything is Krishna's. I am here for self-realization. Wealth is not my concern. That is Krishna's wealth, right? Whether it is wife, children, and whatever happens to them also doesn't bother you anymore. If you are in that state, yeah? Because they all belong to Krishna anyway. And Krishna has given them to you to look after for some time. After that, your connection with them is over. That understanding in household life. Wife and children, Krishna has left them with you to look after for some time. And once they have grown up, your responsibility is finished with them. So, and your own body is Krishna's wealth. Krishna's body it is. And it is an instrument what Krishna has given to you to make spiritual progress, for spiritual self-realization. And Krishna says that also. Brahmava logadishanam udamava deva. This is for realization of the self. So that means the body is not yours, the house is not yours, and family is not yours, relations are not yours, none of them is yours, everything is Krishna's. And when you take that approach, then it will so happen that if it is Krishna's house, you have to look after the house, knowing well that it belongs to Krishna's. And if it is Krishna's house, Krishna is present in the house. And similarly, wife, children, relations, everything is Krishna's. And therefore, your relationship with them changes. Initially, you are thinking they are all mine. But over once this understanding comes, that is what that word Nirmama means. No mamata anywhere. Everything is Krishna's wealth, right? And temporarily Krishna has left them with you, so you have to look after them, because Krishna has left them with you. It is Krishna's wealth, property, and so you look after them. And this bhavam inside is nirmamatvam. No mamata anywhere. Everything is Krishna's. And dealing with the world in Vyavaharam also in the same way is Nirmamatvam, right? And if you develop that Nirmamata, then you will know that it is Krishna, so it should be taken care of properly. And there, but at the same time, no attachment in that. It is Krishna's property anyway. Then he says, Drita Sauhrada. Drita Sauhrada means that wife, children, relations, all nirmamatvam there. But at the same time, internally, they have a caring attitude towards them, right? And friendship to them, a friendly relationship with them. That means no hate, no ragadvesham inside. With the Guru, he should have to have tremendous love and as well as attachment. Not like in physical level, but on a spiritual level, that attachment. A gratitude for being saved by his mercy. Then asatvaram. Asatvaram means that doing things in a way with Shraddha, and with concentration. You can see people are different in this world, isn't it? Some people do everything in a very hush-hush, and nothing gets right, everything goes wrong. But some others think about things and do it in a systematic way, organized way. That way, they are not in a rush to do anything, but whatever they do, they'll do it in a proper way. That means asatvara means that. Asatvara means no tvara. Tvara means, you know, this nature in us to do things in a rushing, trying to do things and everything goes bad, right? So no tvara, but done with proper reflection and proper analysis and studying the situation and executing the thing in a proper way. If tvara comes, what Krishna is saying about asatvaram, isn't it? If tvara comes, what will happen is that you will be very oscillating inside mind. If you are very confused inside with tvara means that, right? You won't be able to focus on anything properly. And so the concentration of the mind is affected by tvara. That's what tvara does. So Krishna is saying asatvara. Normally, when you have somebody has tvara, you will always find he has got very confused inside, doing things like that. Yeah, in a very you can observe in people that. And mind is peaceful when somebody is asatvara. Peaceful mind, able to focus on things properly, able to think properly, and doing things after thinking about it in such a way. Shandi Siri. Only when one is peaceful inside, he will be able to focus on things and able to do things in a proper way. Then he is saying Arthajityasu. Arthajityasu means he has got intense desire to know the tattva, to understand the tattva. He must have very focused on the goal of spiritual life, which is self-realization, able to get our spiritual identity back. Yeah, and he wants it so badly that he is so focused and he knows his goal in spiritual life, what it is. You can see how we get deviated from spiritual goal. So many different people say so many different things, and sometimes you think this is right, sometimes you think something else is right. So all it becomes distractions in spiritual life, moving away from your actual spiritual goal. Spiritual goal is realizing the self. Shastram mukti hi tanyanare swarupena vyavasthiti. To get that swarupam back, yeah, so that doesn't happen. So the way to understand that is that if self-realization becomes the goal of a person, and if he hasn't got it, while leaving this body, at least, even if he hasn't got it, at least this tattva jityasa, he should reach the peak of it by the time he leaves the body. You may not have realized the truth in this life, in this body here. But while practicing spiritual life, if you had this goal in your mind, by the time of death, by the time death happens, this tattva jityasa should have peaked at that point, should have peaked in a person, tattva jityasa. That means all other misunderstanding about spiritual life should leave you. Spiritual life, you get deviated many, many different ways, distractions. Sometimes people say book distribution is the goal of life. Somebody else will say distributing prasadam is the goal of life. Somebody will say making a lot of disciples, preaching is the goal of life. They are all different goals of life. They will put it like this, as though spiritual life is meant for all that. Some others will say building a lot of temples is the goal of life. Someone else will say, studying the books is more important. And all these are there in spiritual life. But actual goal of life is realizing the self. Nothing else. To get back our spiritual identity. Right now, we are in this avidya, I am this body. I have to become free from that. And I am told, Shastram says that you are not this body. You are the same as Antaryami inside. So how to get that spiritual identity back? Yeah. So Krishna is saying that even if you have not reached that self-realization, which is called self-realization, even if you haven't got it, at least by the time you leave this body, this desire for self-realization should come to its highest degree. It should peak by the time you leave the body, right? Tattva jityasa. So, this tattva jityasa is a big quality for a proper disciple. Tattva jityasa, right? And even if you have all other qualities for spiritual life, if you don't have this tattva jityasa, it's all waste. It's not of much help, right? How's intent should that be? They say, they give the examples also, that when someone is drowning in the water, in a flooded river, one is in the middle of the water, drowning there, how he is looking for fresh air to breathe, because he's drowning, wants air to breathe. In such a way, one should have the tattva jinyasa inside. The desire to know the tattvam, right? Such an intense jityasa. And in other words, his very existence in this world is dependent on tattvajnanam to that extent, right? That situation, that is what he is saying here. Asatvaro artajityasu. Artajityasu means that, right? Then it should be so intense. In some other place in the Upanishad says, suppose your head caught fire, your head is on fire, and you are looking for water to extinguish this fire, what will you do? You will do anything at that moment to get the water to extinguish the fire. What means is such an urgency you should feel for realizing the self. What is called a mumukshatvam in Shastra. Yeah, you should. Then he says, "Amokhavak." Amokhavak means that you don't talk all nonsense, gossiping and useless things. You don't talk, right? So amokhavak, saying all kinds of things in this world, discussing everything. He speaks very little, very minimum. And if he does talk, he'll talk about spiritual life and self-realization. And he has no interest in otherwise discussing anything else. Then anasuyo amokhavak. Yeah. So in other words, his bhavam, his mood is like a muni. Like a muni. Right? Muni is Atmarama, is it not? Like Krishna talks about a muni in the Bhagavad Gita also, many places, is it not? That you should be like a muni. Munim shantam upasidam adalmagam. So muni is nature. Muni means maunam, silent. That is his nature. He gets only happiness from the self, right? And he talks about the self and he only thinks about the self, Antaryami. So for self-realization, among the sadhanas, this is one important one. And muni. He is very concerned about knowing the self, realizing the self, and even if he wants to think about anything else, he can't think anymore. To that extent, he is focused on that. In other words, his attachment to the soul has grown so strong that he is not able to think about any other subjects in this world. And he is not able to think about anything. He says, anasuyo amokhavak, and how nirmamatvam comes. Nirmamatvam means not attached to anything. How will that happen in wife and children? That's the next verse.
Jayavatya Grihakshetram Sojana Dravinadishu Udasina Samam Pashyan Sarveshwartham Ivalmana.
So, in his relationship, he is saying here that the from his tongue, he won't talk anything related to sense enjoyment, and he won't do anything except sadhana in life. And his situation is that all his senses and the mind is completely absorbed in Krishna and in Krishna's service, that is the bhavam of a muni. So one who is in that way, nature, is amokhavak. Amokhavak means that he, unnecessary things he won't talk, he won't think about it, and he won't act in that way. Such a person, amokhavak, yeah? He is a proper disciple, you can say. And so these are all talked about. He is a disciple who is engaged in the service of the Guru, right? So that means a first-class disciple has to be like this. Only such a person who has got all these qualities spoken in the sixth verse is eligible to be a disciple. To be a disciple, right? So, and only such a person who had these qualifications should be given the knowledge of soul. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile. It won't have any impact on him. And only he will realize the self. So, Krishna puts those conditions first. He said, a guru should be like this, and a disciple should be like this. And if there is a disciple like this, and if there is a guru like that, then that communication, transmission will be perfect. That is Krishna's point. Yeah. So, wife, children, home, land, relations, wealth, one should not be too attached to it. Udasina, he says. Udasina samam pashyan. Sarvesh artham ivalmana. The way to see that is that the same Sachidananda Brahman, Krishna, Paramatma, who is inside a Sandaryami, is present in the wife, present in the children as their soul, and similarly attachment to parents, relations, all these things, there also you have to think in the same way. That same Antaryami is present in them. And as far as Antaryami is equal to all, to the husband, to the wife, to the children, everybody. Just like also one has to think that, just like I am concerned about my wife, my children, in the same way, and I want them to be happy, it is equally important that everybody else also in this world. That means this concept to think that me and my family only should be happy. Others, whatever happens to them, I can't even bother. That thinking is not the right way to think about it. Right? To accept that same Antaryami is present in them, so why should they have the same happiness in life like I have, I'm expecting. So, that's the way. And happiness and distress, as much as I have, others have also got it. They are also going through the same suffering of this world in different ways, right? So, I should not feel that only my happiness and my distress is important. Others' happiness and others' distress is not important. That thinking must leave us. Others are also suffering in this world. And they are also going through the same distress in another way. But often it is difficult for most of the people to accept that. Yeah. So knowing this truth, it says that, knowing this, that everybody is going through the miseries of life, one should become a little bit indifferent to one's own wife and children. Because when you realize that others are also going through the same thing, I should not think that my own wife and my children should be happy. That feeling should leave us. That's what that Udasinam word means. Udasina samam pashyan. Able to see equally in this bodily extensions, in other words. Why should I think that my own family, friends should be happy, not others, I'm not bothered about them. That thinking must leave us. As much as suffering is concerned, everybody is suffering in this world. Able to accept it. And because of that, I don't have to feel any preferential treatment to my wife and children. I shouldn't think like that. That preferential relationship like that, that should leave us. That's what he is saying here. Udasina sam jayamatya griha kshetra sojana dravinadishu. In all that, all these things, udasinam. And thinking that others also are in this world, they will also go, I will also go. Why do I keep this mindset that mine is important, not others is not important. Udasinam samam pashin sarvesho arthamivalmana, Krishna is saying. Understand that, he says. And to develop this mamata to all my mind, that is not, that is meaningless, he is saying. Meaningless, right? So, that's one thing. And so to think that my happiness and distress is important, others' happiness and distress is not important, that's the wrong thing. And that is due to ajnanam. And so, so, able to treat everyone in equal, again Krishna is talking about samam, that nature here. If you cultivate this, Krishna is saying that, then what will happen is that you will feel the same love and affection you feel towards your family members, you will feel it towards others as well. Others as well, right? And you won't start thinking, my wife and my children is more important than anybody else, wife and children. So, not to keep any special relationship, special treatment to your own family members. And in that way, one should take Krishna, Guru shelter and learn the science of the soul. So, for such a person, Guru who has developed this mood in himself, Shishya Bhavam, to him, the spiritual master will talk to him about the Atma Tattvam. And then he says, first thing is to see things in an equal level, right? And because the soul is one, present in everybody, that is why Krishna said samam there, samam here. Yeah? So, and that Atma, who is, Atma itself is difficult to understand. Explanation is difficult about Atma. You can, so many ways people think about Atma, so much misunderstanding about Atma, what Atma is, the soul is, right? And because Atma is one, he said it is samam, equal in everybody. And what is this Atma? Krishna is explaining in the next verse. Vilakshana sthula sushmat dehan almekshida sodrakka yatha agnir daryano dahyo dahaganya prakashaka. That is Atma. Yeah? Vilakshana sthula sushmat dehan almekshida sodrakka yatha agnir daryano dahyo dahago anya prakashaka. Everyone in their own mind has their own understanding of Atma. We all think differently. That is why the second chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, even though we read it, we all understand it differently. The same chapter. Yeah. So, like many people think, body is a cage. And in that cage, inside there is Atma. People have that perception, right? Then Krishna also said that Atma has nothing to do with the body. Even though we say Atma is inside, Atma has nothing to do with the body. No connection between Atma and the body, right? And body is present in the Atma. On one hand we say Atma is present inside. On the other hand we say body is coming from the Atma, right? And Deham, this body, is got three levels, isn't it? Stulam, Sushmam, Karanam. Gross body is there, subtle body is there, and the causal body is there, Karanam, Shariram. Atma is totally different from these three bodies. Completely different, right? Atma is Sachidanandam, Swarupam, Satya Chitta Anandam. And he is saying here, Daho Anya Prakashaka, Swayam Prakasham. That is the beauty of Atma. What does that mean? Swayam Prakasham means Sodrukka, he is saying. Dahava Anya Sodrukka, these are all about Atma. Sodrukka, Swayam Prakashaka. In other words, Prakasham means it is Chaitanyam, consciousness. That's the only English word you can see. Chaitanyam or consciousness, right? In other words, its Swarupam is Satchidanandam, Satta Chitta Anandam. That is Atma. Spiritual definition of Atma is Satta Chitta Anandam. What that means is, it was not created. It always exists. And it doesn't go through any changes. This is the first thing about Atma to know. Atma doesn't go through any changes. Atma doesn't go through any changes. Everything else in this world goes through changes. Atma doesn't go through changes. This is the first principle, right? And it remains like that all the time. All the time. And it is because of that only that we are not feeling the changes that's happening in the body. Because Atma doesn't, you see, sometimes if somebody asks me, who are you? I can't 100% say I am this body. Because I know inside me, there is this awareness in me, tells me when I was born, and that I am feeling is always stable, existing in me all the time. Never leaves us, isn't it? Body is changing continuously. Mind is changing, intelligence is changing, ahankaram is changing. Everything else is changing, but that awareness is not changing. Awareness is as it is before. I existed when I was a child, I grew up, became a young man, middle-aged man, now an old man. All these things, awareness is not changed. In awareness, it has not changed. Yeah. So, that awareness is what Krishna is calling it as Sodrukka. Drukka. Drukka means that he is able to, it is a difficult thing to say this, that you are that Drukka, Sodrukka. What means is that you don't require something else to know him. By when you become that, you realize him, that that's what you are. Yeah? So, just like if I want to see something, I need a light. That means with the help of a light, I am able to see something. This drukka is not something you can know through bringing a light from outside or through any external source. So, drukka means that you become that and then you realize that's what you are. Now I am thinking I am this body, but that thing leaves me completely and I become that sodrukka, Atma. And I become Atma and I am Atma then. So that's a way to know Atma. There is no other way of knowing Atma. Right? So because it is Drukha, you don't require anything else to know him. Because it is Drukha, right? So, so, and it is because of that Drukha inside. So Drukha, our other things in this body is working. Like for example, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, the ahankaram. All these things are operating because he is there. That Antaryami is there. In other words, if he is there, they will all work. If he is not there, they won't work. So, so what is Atma then? Atma is that in my subtle body and in my senses, whatever that comes up, for example, senses makes contact with the sense objects in this world. They all come to me in my mind. And they all are experienced inside, in me, the existence of all that. The existence of this world, inside me, I'm experiencing in my mind and in the subtle body, right? And they don't happen automatically. They are happening because of the presence of Atma, Antaryami inside, yeah? And so therefore, he is the drashtava all the time. You see there, vilakshana stula sushmal dehad almechida svadrikka yad agnar daruno dahya dahagonya prakashagam. Then, and the example given here is that you see the firewood. The fire is in the wood, but I can't see the fire. Fire is in the wood, isn't it? But I can't see the fire. Similarly, Atma is inside me. Atma is everywhere, right? And it is different, like the fire is different from the wood. But the fire is in the wood. But fire is different from the wood. In the same way, Atma is in us. But Atma is different from this gross body, subtle body, causal body, everything, right? And gross body, subtle body and all these things is drishyam. Drishyam means I can experience them or I can know them by the presence of Atma. When Atma is present only, I am aware of the presence of this body. The experience of this body I have now and the subtle body is because of the presence of Atma. So, and so Atma is the drikha, body is drishyam. Everything is drishyam. Everything else is drishyam. Subtle body is drishyam, senses are drishyam, world is drishyam. But the existence of all this is only known to me when the drik is present. Drik makes me become aware of this drishyam. Drik makes me become aware of the drishyam. Okay? So, and this drikka and drishyam can never become one. It's not possible. Right? Because drishyam, even though drishyam has come from the drikka, and drikka is giving us the experience of the drishyam, the drishyam, he has no way of going back to the drikka and reporting about the drikka. Drishyam cannot say anything about the drikka. Drishyam always remains separate from drikka. There's a book, Drishya Vivekam, if you read it, it will talk about it. Yeah. So, like fire is present in the wood, but at the same time, it is separate. Similarly, due to my adhyasam, that's what is called adhyasam. Adhyasam means identification with the body. I feel that Atma is in the body. It is only coming from adhyasam, Atma is in the body, right? But on the other hand, even though it appears as though Atma is inside the body, Atma is separate from the body. It's a difficult thing, isn't it? How to perceive this in our mind, to get that, it is difficult. So, so that's why this verse is a bit difficult. It is Krishna has spoken as the best way with that example of the wood, firewood, right? And it is only because of the presence of this Antaryami inside, gross body, subtle body, mind, senses, everything works because of that presence of the Antaryami. And he is the drashtava, drikha here, right? And because of its presence, and the mind is able to experience the world, the existence of the world is felt inside, right? Similarly, our body becomes operational. It starts doing different things because of Atma's presence inside. And that Chaitanya goes into subtle body, and in the gross body everywhere, and therefore everything starts working. You know how difficult it is to explain this Atma. Because when I say like this, you know what you will think? You will think it's like electricity, isn't it? Electricity goes and the light works, fan works. And that's not like that either. Because electricity and all example is based on matter, isn't it? Material examples they are. And material examples won't fit in with the soul. That's the problem. So Atma doesn't go anywhere. Atma is a power that exists all the time, everywhere. And in this body Maya created, and then Atma's presence inside the Maya in the form of Jiva. That's what we are now. And that is very difficult for us to comprehend that situation. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, if you study this, it's very well explained in that 14th chapter, when Krishna discusses three modes of nature. There are some verses there. If you understand that verses, it's the same thing what Krishna is saying here. If you look at that chapter, 14th chapter, three modes of material nature. He's saying there that he's saying to Arjuna, only in one or two occasions Krishna has spoken like this, the way he has spoken, right? He's saying that, I'm going to tell you something he said. First verse itself, Param Bhuya Pravakshami, Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam, Yajnatva Munaya Sarve, Parasiddhim Ito Gadaha. He says, I'm going to tell you something, he says. After hearing this, great rishis, Param Jnatva Munaya Sarve, Param Siddhi Mito Gadaha, they have become perfect in their life. I'm going to tell you that, he said. And then he said, Idam Yana Upashritya, Mama Sadharma Magada, Sargevi Noba Jayande, Pralayana Vedayandija. He says that, with this knowledge, what I'm going to talk to you about three modes of nature, which he's going to talk about in that chapter, he says that they have all become like me. Mahasadharma Magada, they have become like me, Krishna says. Now, Sargevi Noba Jayande, Pralayena Vedayandija, that they started realizing there is no creation and there is no devastation either. You see? So you can see the problem. Krishna's coming from such depth is talking. And we in our present state is not able to resonate with that, what Krishna is saying. It's so hard it is. Because these verses are so deep inside, any amount of explanation, still it won't get in easily. It won't get in. What Krishna is trying to say there. Yeah? Krishna is saying, once you have understood what I am saying, he says in this chapter, then you will know there is no creation, there is no devastation either. That's what he's saying there. Sargevi Noba Jayande, Pralayana Vedayandicha, he says. And that's a bit too much, isn't it, to say like that to someone, that you studied these 27 verses and then there's no creation after that. So this is the difficulty. This is the difficulty, yeah. So this Jiva's position is like that. So if you look in that chapter, he will say, Krishna says, Mama Yonir Mahat Brahmam, Tasmin Garbham Dadhamyaham, Sambhava Sarva Bhudani, Tado Bhavadi Bharada, Sarva Yonishu Kaundeya, Murtaya Sambhavandiya, Tasam Brahma Mahat Yoni, Aham Bija Pradapida. Krishna is smashing all our illusions in our head, yeah. Normally people think man and woman unite together and then the child is born. That's a fake. Everybody thinks like that. It's not. Krishna says that's not the reality. I decide to come and then Jiva is born. Totally different. Just because a man and woman united together, there is no guarantee that a child will be born. Bhagavad Gita completely refutes that. Just because a man and woman join together, there is no guarantee that the child will be born. Bhagavad Gita is saying, Aham te tasam brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradapida. When Krishna comes, only then a jiva comes. So Krishna is a soul, from jiva comes. So childbirth, like, you know, people who want to have children, who don't have children, they go through a lot of, and all those explanations, like you can, for example, in allopathy, Ayurvedam, everywhere, in all these systems, they have an explanation about childbirth and how to have children. For that, they have different methods to help you out to have children if you don't have children. Those things are there. But they are all within the scope of Prakriti, it is spoken, within Maya. You are talking about it. This knowledge, what Krishna is talking about, is outside Maya. Krishna is saying that Sarva Yonisho Kaundheya Murtaya Sambhavandiya Tasam Brahma Mahat Yonir Aham Bija Pradapida. When I come, that is when Jiva comes. Krishna's perception is like that, totally different from what we are used to thinking. When we have, for example, normally people get married and then they have to have children, and when they don't have children, they think that there is something wrong. They go to the doctor. Doctor have give them some method of IVF treatment and all that is there, isn't it? So those things are medical way of looking at it. And similarly, in Ayurveda also, there are certain things they will say that you can follow to if you don't have children. But they are not correct from the Shastra point of view. They are all within the Prakriti. Inside the Prakriti, what you can do. That's all what the doctors are telling you. Within the Prakriti, what you can do. But Krishna is saying that itself is not good enough. Actually, it happens. Aham bija pradapida. So in this way, to understand the soul is very difficult. So many explanations in so many different ways from so many different rishis. And soul is not discussed like this by other religions. They don't discuss it in this way. Whereas in Vedic tradition, this is a very important topic. What is soul? And understanding the soul. Right? So, Atma, Krishna decided to define Atma like this. The thing what doesn't change, that is one quality of the soul. It never changes. It stays as it is all the time. Right? And whereas body is subject to change. Body changes. Body cannot stay as it is all the time. Right? And so, Atma is Sachidanandam. Satta Chitta Anandam, and that doesn't change. So therefore, Atma is Drik. Because of the presence of Atma, you experience everything else. Body, mind, senses is all Drishyam. Is all Drishyam. And these body, mind, senses, they are there, and it is able to do some things, this body, mind and senses. And it is acting in different ways, body, mind and senses, right? And that power, they get it from Atma. Atma's presence can be seen only when the body, mind and senses are working. When they are working, you can notice the presence of Atma there. Without Atma, they won't do. Otherwise, they are dead matter. No life in them. But when they are working, you can see that there is presence of Atma in them. So similarly, the Drika, Atma, it is his presence only, you are experiencing the world outside. Because he is present inside. Inside means he is outside also at the same time. And Jiva is present in the subtle body. Jiva is in the subtle body, right? And because, how do you know that? Because your ego is there. The Jiva is an ego. And that ego or jiva is in the subtle body, right? And when you have that, that is when you start thinking that you are a particular person. You realize yourself, oh, I am so and so. This is my name. I live in this particular place. This is all a part of that personality, vyaktitva, individuality, right? And then jiva is that chaitanyam antaryami, which is identifying with the gross body, which lives in the subtle body, and which has got a personality. These are all part of that jiva. It has nothing to do with atma, again. It's nothing to do with atma. So this difference between atma and jiva is a very complex one to understand. Yeah. So what is jiva then? Jiva is nothing but atma only, but it's reflection in the subtle body. Reflection means not like the mirror and the... This not kind of reflection is the only word you can use for that. Yeah. So it is atma, but atma with all the complexities of the subtle body. Subtle body, the gross body, and the causal body. These three bodies created by Maya and thrown on the throne. And Atma entered into that. That is this package now. So Atma is present, and Atma is present, these things will work. Which one? The Jiva will be there, the subtle body will be there, everything is there. So Jiva is nothing but a reflection of this Atma. Atma is drashtava and Atma is present everywhere. So Jiva is reflection, and whereas Jiva experiences the world, everything in the world, and he enjoys through the senses, all the sense objects in the world. All this is only possible if that Antaryami inside, who is Drika, is present. That's what he's saying. Vilakshana stola sushmam. Dehan Almekshidam so drika. Yad Adnir Dharuno Dahya Dahagonya Pragashaga. All these are Upanishad's message spoken in Krishna's words. It's when the Upanishads all this. Vilakshana. Vilakshana means he has nothing to do with the body. Totally independent. But he is there. Totally independent, he is there. But the subtle body, gross body, everything, only if he is there, it will work. So, and that, and Alma is outside this subtle body, whereas Jiva is inside the subtle body. Again, when I say like that, you may start thinking, you will start imagining there is a box inside me, and there is somewhere a location where Jiva stays. We tend to think everything through material way, like the way we are educated, is it not? But in spiritually life, that is the problem actually, that it is not. For example, the mind, you see. What is mind? Nobody knows still. You ask the psychiatrist, he will give you, psychologist and all, they'll give you some explanation of the mind. But if you ask them, where is it? They don't know where it is in the body. So the only thing you can say that we all know there is a thing called mind, because we are experiencing emotions, thoughts. That means there is some power inside us which is thinking, feeling, willing, and emotional things like that. So there is some force inside us which is doing that. And where is it? Nobody knows. And this is in the subtle things that is coming from the soul. When the soul is there, only the mind is there. Once the soul goes away, the mind also finished. There is no mind anymore. And you can also see that in the deep sleep state, mind is not there. So only during the waking state and the dream state, the mind is operating. So there are so complex this body is. And we think that we know everything about this body. There's very little what we know about this body. Very little we know about this body. Yeah. So Antaryami we call, see, soul also, we give different names to it. Is it not? Pratyabhijna we say sometimes. Antaryami we say. Sometimes we say Sutratma. Sometimes we say Prajna. Sometimes we say Jnapti. Different way addresses. But still in spite of all these different names, we are still not able to pinpoint and say this is it, what the soul is. Yeah. So that is the problem here. So he is saying that Atma, to understand Atma, that is why it's called Atma Tattva. Atma Tattvam, right? And that nature of that Atma in Bhagavatam says, Jnanam, is it not? Jnanam, yeah. Jnanam is the nature of the Atma. So when you say like that, then your concept again changes, what Atma is. So sometimes you see one way in think about Atma, you are not able to come to terms with it. When you say in another way also, you cannot come to terms with it. So through Ajnanam or Avidya, that when they say like this, we have completely forgotten what our spiritual identity is. So then what happened? I started identifying with the body. Then the problem begins. So with that, Dehabhimanam comes. And then I became a personality. Only when I started identifying with the body, I became a personality. Then I got my passport, and then I got all the other documents to prove who I am. It's all avidya it is. But this is our situation, right? We all became individuals. That is how individuality has come to everybody. We all become individuals. So, therefore Krishna is saying, because of this individuality nature, identification body, and that has happened due to this stula body, shariram, gross body, and due to the subtle body, all that has nothing to do with Atma. Atma is different from all of that. For that Krishna used that word vilakshanam. You see that word vilakshanam? Vilakshana stula sushma dehad. Stula sushma deham has nothing to do with Atma. This vilakshanam. There is no connection between the two. No connection between the two, right? So Atma remains sodrakka. He is only a drakka. He remains like that. And deham, gross body, senses, mind, they are all drishyam. But drishyam can only work if drashta is there. Otherwise there is no drishyam. So, the presence of this body, the mind, the senses, can only happen if drashta is there. Now I am saying I got this body, mind, senses, everything. I can only say that if Atma is there. Atma is the one which gives me the feeling of the presence of all these things in me. So, similarly, if I have to say that I am a person, personality, all that feeling is coming to me because of the presence of Atma. If Atma is not there, I won't be able to say I am a person, I am an individual. Individuality won't be there. I won't refer the connection feel with this body and the subtle body and the senses and the world even. So then we say, from these explanations you will think Atma is present inside the body, right? But at the same time Atma has nothing to do with the body. So therefore he is saying this vilakshanam word. That one word means all these things. Vilakshana. Vilakshana stula sushma deha nalmekshida sudrakka. Yadha agnir dhagano dahyo dahagonya pragashaka. Then he gave this example, agni, fire. Agni nature is it burns everything. Dahagam, right? Dahagam, right? And at the same time, agni has got another quality, light, pragasham, light. And its power to burn, heat and light, the two qualities, right? So, so agni, which burns everything and which is light, is present inside the wood. Present inside the wood. And even though it is present inside the wood, you can't see it. So, like the way fire is present in the wood, completely not connected with the wood, but it is present there. In the same way, Alma also, in this body, stays in that way. It has nothing to do with the body, is no connection with the body, but just like when fire comes out from the wood, when you burn the wood, right? Alma inside us, you have to notice its presence. When the body does things, you notice the presence of Atma. Like when the fire comes out from the wood, you start thinking that there is fire in the wood. But you will never be able to locate the fire in the wood. In the same way, Atma's presence in the body is only possible to know when the wood, that is this gross body, starts working, doing. When the wood starts burning, then you start realizing there is fire in the wood. In the same way, the presence of Atma in the body can be detected only when the subtle body and the gross body is doing different things. That is what he is saying here. Ed Agnir Dhyano Dahyo Dahago Anya Prakashaka. Right? Atma inside us, right, is totally disconnected with the body. Vilakshana, right? So Deham. It is present in this body, it is present inside, but he has no connection with the body, gross body or the subtle body, right? And that is what he is saying here. Because this example of fire and the wood, yeah, due to that, the same thing applies to soul also in a different way. Nityatvam vibhuttvam ekatvam. How does it come? Next verse. Nirodhulpatyanubrahan nanatvam talkridan gunan andapravishtam adatta evam deha gunan para. This is these three things. Nityatvam vibhuttvam ekatvam. We'll come to that, what that means. Say fire is in the wood. And when the fire starts burning, the wood starts burning, the fire also is the same form as the wood, isn't it? When the wood is burning, right? Suppose you have a huge piece of wood, and if it is burning, the fire will be big from that. And the flame has become so big due to the size of the wood, right? If it is a big block of log of wood, when it burns, the fire will be big from that. So, whereas if you take a small branch of wood and if you burn that, you get a small flame from that. A small flame will come out from that. So, or suppose you cut a branch of a tree which has got many branches, a big branch you have cut, which has got small branches. And if you set fire to that, the fire will take the shape of that branch of wood. With all the little branches, everything will burn. If you look at it, it will be burning the same shape as the wood, what was there before, right? Or if that wood is very wet, it won't burn properly, right? Or smoke will come out from that when it burns. Actually, what is Agni there? He is what Krishna calls it as Dahagam and Prakashagam. Though Agni's nature or fire's nature, that it burns and it gives you light. Two things, right? So, that is all, fire means only that. There is light and there is heat. Those two things, right? So, but the size of the flame and the shape of the flame, the form and all that, is dictated by the wood. Depending on the size of the wood and the shape of the wood, it will burn. Right? The shape of the fire will be like that. Right? So, it is the same situation with Atma. Atma is like that, right? Even though it is present in this body, it has no connection with the body, and Alma is only what Krishna calls it as Ichida. You see there? Dehal Alme Ichida. Ichida, he is Ichida. Means he is looking at everything. Drashtava he is, right? And he is pure consciousness. Chaitanyam Prakashakam. Chaitanyam is his light, what is coming. Light means not like this light. Chaitanyam means its presence is felt in that way. So, even though Atma is pure Sachidanandam by nature, due to adhyasam, due to identification with the body, we feel that the self is this body. It is due to identification. This identification is the biggest problem. In reality, Atma has no connection with the body. Yeah? And our reality is that due to our avidya, that is where avidya comes, right? Due to avidya's presence inside us, we have lost that identification with the Atma and we have misunderstood that this body is me. This is the biggest avidya that is inside us and that is in the Karana Shariram, in the causal body, that avidya. And that is what we are fighting against. Spiritual life is to get out of this misunderstanding. That is spiritual life. It's not all the other things what we talk about. Our other things what we talk about is just like going back to Krishna, finding the service there, what we have to do, how to please Krishna. They are all secondary things. This is the primary thing. To come out of this bodily identification. This is the avidya inside us. Other things are not avidya. Other things. You see, what happened now is, most of the people are thinking that this, they never talk about this important part, which is our basic avidya. Mula avidya it is called. What Maya has put inside us is this mula avidya that forced us to forget Antaryami Krishna, which is our actual identity, and made us to identify with this body, and that is why we are suffering here. We are not suffering because I am not having a conjugal relationship with Krishna. I am not suffering because of that. I am suffering in this world because of my identification with the body. Isn't it? Anybody can think, understand that. My suffering in this world is not because of I don't have any conjugal relationship with Krishna. That is bhakti bhavam it is. That is not the fundamental problem we have got is this adhyasam with the body. Deha adhyasam. Unless I become free from the bodily identity, all my spiritual life is gone. The goal of spiritual life is to become free from this bodily identity. That's the first thing, right? So that is what is called adhyasam. Deha adhyasam, right? So, so because of this deha adhyasam, I am thinking that everything what is happening to the body, specialities of the body, I also have got it. And in the subtle body, I have this andhakaranam, what is called. And whereas Antaryami is not even in the subtle body, he is outside, separately from here. And you can see this in 26th chapter in the Kapila Maharshi's teachings, Devahuti talking about this. Right? At the end you will see this, right? So where are we? Our actual jiva's position is in the subtle body. Is in the subtle body. Whereas Sachidananda Brahman, Antaryami, is outside the subtle body and he reflects in the, his presence is felt inside the subtle body, in the senses and in the gross body. When it reflects in the subtle body, you feel this personality thing comes to you. Personal, you feel that you are a person when it reflects in the subtle body. And depending upon your samskaram, what you have cultivated in several lifetimes, you feel that I am such and such a person and we identify with that. That is how this ahangaram is. Ahangaram comes here. So, so it is important that the samskaram, what is in the subtle body, inside the subtle body, especially in the chittam, that is what dictates that what kind of person you are, how you are thinking about yourself, that personality, that is coming based on that samskaram in your subtle body. not that what others say. You, how that identification gets inside us with the subtle body, and how you start thinking about yourself in different levels, in different ways. All that is due to that samskaram inside the chittam, in the subtle body. Andaryami is one. Sachidananda Paramatma, that's only one. Subtle bodies are many. Subtle bodies are many. And in each subtle body, when the Sachidananda Brahma, Andaryami reflects, then according to the samskaram of what you have acquired from previous lifetimes, different kinds of personalities come from different subtle bodies, and that is how Jiva is born. And that is how you call him as Jiva. And that is how this Jiva Bhavam has come to us. Actually, we have nothing to do with Jiva Bhavam. Because you can see this, Jiva Bhavam is not even permanent. When you go to deep sleep, where is Jiva there? So Jiva is only present, only in the waking state and in the dream state. So all this understanding is necessary. Otherwise, you are shooting in the dark in spiritual life without knowing these things. Yeah, I mean, to satisfy people, Puranams will say different things. That you were in spiritual world once and then you fell down from there. And all that kind of things. And you were in this planet before. Puranams have their own way of saying things. And it is necessary also, because that makes spiritual life interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
When you don't have all this, who will listen to soul? Nobody will be interested in the soul. So it makes you interesting in spiritual life. All the Puranams, if you start, and all the confusion that creates from that. And for a long period of time in life, you will be chasing all that to find out this Puranam has said like this in this place, it has said like that, and so many stories. They have spoken all the stories also in the same way to strengthen our taste for spiritual life. So once you get interested, and then you start realizing all this is not true. Like I was saying, that example, creation, right? As far as Shastram is concerned, no creation has happened. But then why in third canto, verse after verse after verse, how Brahma came and created this whole thing? When you read all that, then you start verifying. He says there is four kinds of living entities. And you know that, all types of things are spoken. And then Brahma, how he created. And then he told his people, do this and all. This is all in the Puranam. And in Puranams, there is a different ways of saying about this creation. If you go to Upanishad, Upanishad says no creation has happened so far. So this is enough to confuse Hinduism for anybody. People get confused with all these things. They think that you got so many books and so many gods and so many different ideas also. So which one is the right one, they will ask. People will ask like that, don't they? So their problem is that they are not able to. This is a tradition that goes into millions of years. Nobody knows when it started. First the knowledge came to the rishis, and they gave it in their deep meditations in the forest, and they spoke about it to their disciples, and they recorded to the extent what in the leaf they wrote it down, and then it stayed like that for a long time, but it always stayed in the tradition state. Even though no recorded history was there like the way we have now. And that it carried on for millions of years like that. And Bhagavad Gita was open only 5,000 years. We say only 5,000. That means it's a brand new one compared to all the other traditions before that. Yeah. So this is this tradition you are trying to understand with our limited brain. These millions of years of traditions. How can you do that? It is not possible. That is why this remains as a mystery for most of the modern religions. Whereas other religions, 2000 years, 1500 years started. So they got some recorded, a person came and started it. And that's how it started. Whereas this, nobody started this. Krishna didn't start this. And Ramachandra didn't start this. Lord Shiva didn't start this. It existed even before Rama and Krishna and Shiva came to this world. The tradition existed. They were all personalities who came in the tradition and spoke that philosophy and lived and showed it to the world that it is the truth. So the whole thing changes completely when you look at Vedic tradition with the compared with the other traditions. Yeah. So I think we'll stop there. We'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada.